Hey, let's start the show.
It's June 2nd, 2011. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, wearing a plaid shirt, Norman Chan. You have snaps.
Snaps
on your shirt.
Oh, just the top two buttons.
Really?
It's a mixture of snaps. And I didn't. First of all, I did not know until last year what snaps were. I don't think I call them snaps. I just call them buttons.
They're snaps. Buttons go through a hole. That's technology. Snaps are an upgraded form of button that is associated mainly with Western shirts and things that Dave wears.
Yes,
also, you,
true.
It would seem.
Yeah.
Gary, you're wearing a Nike swoosh T-shirt. That's an unusual marketing-y for you.
I think it's oxymoronic.
I actually, I felt like that maybe we spend too much time at the top of the podcast discussing things that people cannot see.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there have been some comments to that effect as well.
That's positive feedback.
So I deliberately wore the most plain T-shirt I could find in my drawer.
Well, something relatable. It's people living in the 90s.
Well, and the thing is, you couldn't have just worn a black T-shirt and a pair of jeans, because then I would accuse you of wearing the Steve Jobs uniform.
What's ironic about me wearing a Nike T-shirt?
Because you're usually so hip and... And this is so mainstream.
I think that was a fitness jab at probably.
That's what I took.
Whoa,
from
no.
It.
Yeah,
that
no.
was my inference.
Yeah. Anyway, let's just get. There's a lot of news this week. Let's just jump right into it.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah.
Let's get straight to the meaty.
The business.
Filling. Yeah.
Business time.
Let's brush the fruit that no one eats off the pancakes and dive straight into the pancakes themselves.
Are you done with the metaphors?
Yeah, where's the Slim Jim?
If you're playing Tested Podcast Bingo right now, if you've got that on your card, you're doing good.
I'm just gonna sit here and drink my coffee while I introduce Computex, which is one of the two conferences that's going on right now, even as we speak.
Oh man, what a segue!
Yeah, Computex is in Taipei, which is a long way from here. We don't go there. It is a whole shitload of motherboards. Some like PacRim smartphone, Asus, Acer, those guys are introducing their smartphone lines mostly for Asia and China. But Asus yesterday introduced the Pad phone.
Is Asus the correct pronunciation?
Well, it's interesting because we've been told Asus.
Asus, because
I always say Asus.
No, I guess that's the wrong one. That's wrong for sure.
Because like how in England we say Adidas, and then I came to America and I had to learn to say
what the fuck is Adidas?
Adidas.
Right.
It's Adidas.
Well, is it? I think you should ask a German.
Adidas.
They would actually be the authority.
Well, last time we asked Germans, we all know how that worked out for everybody.
Wait.
Subtle racism.
Whoa.
What?
Cross that off your bingo card if you're playing at home.
Yeah, so it's like aluminium.
No, not at all.
Well, the weird thing about aluminium is it's not even just pronounced differently. It's aluminum. You take a whole syllable out.
Yeah.
Well, you add a syllable. There's no IUM.
There are certain American things that really bug me, like aluminum and things like that.
How do you do with
use? It always seems like that you prefer to use the dumbed down version of a word. Like, oh, how can we take some syllables out and make this less
binoculars?
Fart instead of flatulence.
Binoculars.
Well, that's the same. You know, some pronunciations are different. I've lived here for 15 years now, so I say laboratory rather than laboratory, which is, you know, the way you would say it in.
No, we say laboratory.
We say laboratory.
Here. You have it backwards. Laboratory is how the English.
See, I get all turned around.
Right.
The thing that bugs me the most, though, and people in England, when this happens in American films, people kind of snicker in the audience, is when somebody says, "We have to go to Venice, Italy." The assumption being that most Americans don't know where Venice is, or like, let's go to Paris, France.
Well, but
I know where Paris is, dude. You don't need to put the country on the end. That's a really weird thing.
No. The reason we do it is because when the immigrants moved here, you know, in the 17th and 18th centuries, they couldn't come up with original names for places.
Right,
so
that's why you have New York and New England and New Hampshire and places that are all named after where you really came from.
There's seven Venices in America, probably. So if you say Venice and you're, you know, the Italian job could have taken place in Venice Beach.
I don't think they're going to go, you know, diamond heist in Venice.
So you have to establish you're going to the actual one, not the fake one that you created over here.
Right. Like in 3,000 miles to Graceland, if they hadn't said, hey, we're going to Memphis, Tennessee, they could have been driving to Memphis, Egypt. It could happen.
I guess.
Is there a Graceland there? Is that like a franchise thing now?
I just remember in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade when the guy says, and we have traced these ancient artifacts back to Venice, Italy. And people in the audience kind of went, pfft. Like, what other Venice would there be? Like, we all did basic geography. We know where Venice is. Thank you very much.
It's Indiana, the one with the canals. Like,
you'd think Indiana Jones would be the one person you would not have to explain basic geography to.
Well, he does have a state in his name.
Let's go back to talking about motherboards.
Yeah, so the Padfone. Just, you know nothing about this product at this point, right, Gary?
Wrong.
Oh.
You wrongly assume
that
I know nothing.
Coming in cold.
By the way, I resent the person on the podcast for feedback this week.
This is getting a little too navel-gazing-y.
Gary is great because he plays the part of somebody who knows nothing about technology.
You got the same comments on the PC Gamer podcast,
I don't know nothing
too.
About technology. I do know some things.
Yes.
But what I like to do is ask the kind of questions that people know very little. Well, that, like, to force you to explain things.
That is very much a time-honored good interview technique.
Yes.
Is to play dumb.
Explain it to
Repeating
me.
Repeating the question.
Right.
Explain it to me like I'm a five-year-old, right. As Denzel Washington would
the
have
Barbara
said.
Walters effect.
Yes.
Yeah. So
the Padfone is what is like the Atrix,
let's do
right?
This the other way around.
Oh, very good. Man, you're getting points today.
It's a phone that docks into a tablet computer.
Well, so the Atrix docks into a laptop computer.
Right.
This docks into a tablet, and it's all Android all the time, mm-hmm. So there's no kind of weird pre-boot environment
now,
or
spell
whatever.
Spell Padfone.
Padfone.
Oh, you got the spelling right, too.
Zing!
Damn. Yeah. Two for two.
Yeah.
I've been reading my stuff this week.
So, it's a dumb name. I don't care. I'm not. We're not talking
it
about names at all.
It is dumb.
This week, we learned that the next PlayStation is probably going to be called the Viva, which is a dumb name.
Vita, isn't it?
Vita, sorry.
Vita. Or Vita.
I think it's Vita.
Doesn't matter. It's still dumb.
Hey, pro tip, when it's not immediately obvious how the name should be pronounced, that's a warning sign.
Right. I mean, you look at Wii, and even though that's a dumb name, at least you know how to pronounce that. It's not Y.
The point being that names ultimately do not matter.
That is why I don't care about names anymore.
Right.
Like, it's funny because I tweeted that the other morning, and literally like 50 people responded and were like, hey, you're right. Names are stupid. Why do we argue about these all the time?
The example I always give is the Beatles is mm-hmm. the worst name for a rock band you could possibly come up with.
At the time.
But it didn't matter.
Natalie Portman's shaved head would care to argue with
you. If the Beatles had never existed, and say the White Stripes had come along and had called themselves the Beatles.
Yeah.
People would say that's a shitty name. But it wouldn't matter because the music would still be really good, and that's what ultimately people care about. People care about the product. The Wii is a terrible name, but the product sold on other aspects
it
that people like.
So we're talking about this earlier. Androids can run out of names. I mean, for phones. There's so many Android phones.
Well, they're going to start just making up names.
Yeah.
Well, it's like cars, right? You have to come up with names all the time for different cars.
Well, cars usually have like some Latin root or a root in a core in a language that is then used to make the word.
Atrix is matrix without the M.
Well,
it's a Motorola Atrix.
Right.
You know, oftentimes with car names, they'll try to conjure up what the car is about. Like Ford has, you know, with all its SUVs, Explorer, Expedition, Excursion, all right. Kind of feel mm-hmm. like taking a trip, you know, cross-country
right.
type
and,
stuff.
And like Toyota names are based on Latin roots or something like right. that, somebody yes. said last week. I don't know any of this
Highlander,
stuff.
Highlander, no, Camry.
But just like Evo and Infuse and things like that, like they're just trying to come up with stuff that sounds cool. Well, it doesn't really mean anything.
Right. Well, that's what marketing is. That's yes. what naming products has become. Instead yes. of trying to make a product that describes what the product is, because if you think about it, if Don Draper was naming the iPhone, it would be called the CompuPhone, because
yes.
it's a computer and a phone.
Yes.
And it may have Pocket in there, something. It would be called the Pocket CompuPhone.
Unfortunately, the reality is that today's equivalent of Don Draper are these people that will go away and, you know, these consultancy companies that will go away. Because I've been in these rooms with these people. You know,
like when they're naming movies or stuff like that?
Magazines and movies and all kinds of different products. And, you know, they go, we have done all this research. And, like, I mean, you probably, I don't know if you've ever seen that legendary document that goes into how the new Pepsi logo and brand identity was created.
Are you talking about the frowny one?
The
one that had multiple personalities.
Yes. I mean, it's filled with so much pseudo gobbledygook bullshit. And they'll go away and they'll make up all this bullshit and explain to you why, you know, it conjures up all these images and creates associations in the consumer's mind and taps into this, that, and the other thing, and then give you a bill for $10 million.
Yes. Yeah, and then they have to change the logo back 6 months later.
For a one-syllable word and a logo yeah. that a five-year-old could have drawn.
So here's my question. I think this is all part of the – this is completely off topic, but this is interesting, so we're going to roll with it.
That's what I like about you, Will. You play fast and loose.
Hey, man.
This is new Will.
Not afraid to go off topic.
I had times next to the topic so that we would stay on track.
Oh, my God.
All out the window.
It's fuck it.
Yeah,
when you're sensing the right vibe, you just gotta grab on and hold on tight.
You know, you're
gonna go off topic of the off topic.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing because we're talking Android phones.
It's dangerous.
I will buy the Android phone named the Homer. Someone should just do it.
I want to have a phone named the Chan. Think of how well that would sell in Asia.
No, it'd be
that's
very confusing.
Racist.
Yeah. That's so racist and confusing.
The Homer would be the phone for the average man.
It would be perfect.
You think a bubble on the back?
I don't care how it's designed. It just needs to be called the Homer and have every feature.
Well, that's basically what Android phones are.
Yeah,
right?
That's why it would have to be an Android phone.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my question about the marketing stuff. Is this all because American business language has devolved to the point that I basically when I sit down in a meeting with somebody from certain companies which will remain unnamed, potentially in the Valley, potentially up north, even down south. You sit down and people are talking about enhancing their core competencies and reaching new verticals and transmogrifying boundaries of time and space.
Yeah, it's all the stuff they learned on their MBA course.
Yeah. I think we've reached a point where communication inside businesses is a real problem for normal people. You graduate from college. You don't know how to speak these – Microsoft is the one that's famous for it because Microsoft – people who work at Microsoft speak a completely different language about the way that they do their business. There's all sorts of – there's jargon and lingo – as far as the eye can see in either direction.
Yeah.
And
institutionalized language.
Yeah, it's almost like if you go to a country where – it's like going to Australia. So you go to Australia. Everybody still speaks English. That's the base language.
Yes.
But Australia especially has there's so much local lingo that has diverged from what I would consider – you know, American English, much less English English.
Well, and I could, and as the only true English speaker here, I could say the same thing about American English.
Same thing applies to you.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I think that this is, we've reached a point where business, people who work in business are devolving, they're devolving the language, or maybe evolving, I don't want to judge, but a lot of times they're adding redundancy and making things less clear, which I think is a devolution.
Right.
And I think that having to pay marketing people millions and millions of dollars to come up with bullshit names for new products is a symptom of that.
Well, you've got to call it something.
Right.
Right. You can't just – I guess you can just make something up randomly.
Well, if Mad Men is true, then they would just go out. They'd get the secretary to come in and make some drinks and then ask her what they should call it and call it a day.
I wonder if that's how it still works. No, it's not anymore. Now,
probably
it's,
interns.
They've turned it into this COD science.
Right. There's a deep thought. There's a giant computer somewhere in the back, and it takes two random words that are associated with the different verticals that they're enhancing and then jams them together until you get a two-syllable word.
So Connect
rhymes.
Is a good example where you can see that what they did was they went, oh, look how clever. It's like it's a new way for you to connect, but it's also kinetic.
Yeah.
So you put it together and what have you got?
It evokes multiple images.
Kin, families.
That'll be $15 million, dollars, please.
Yeah. Yeah. And also,
well, based on how much they sold, move.
Back on topic. Computex, pad phone. Is this a good idea or not?
It's a
tablet that you can slide. It's a tablet shell that you can jam your phone in. It seems like the tablet will have additional battery because he showed the battery running down.
Yep.
And then you plug it in and charging the phone back. So it gives you the opportunity of computing on a small screen when that's convenient or busting out the big screen when it's not.
So it's a two-in-one product.
But
I'm unclear
whether the tablet interface and the phone interface are one and the same. I think it's different. I think it's going to be
Honeycomb on one and gingerbread or ice cream for both.
It'll be ice cream for both, but one will have the tablet interface and one will have the phone interface. Because it'll be the bigger screen.
They said at I.O. though that that ice cream is going to reunify the interfaces.
No, I think it's going to reunify the code base.
No. He specifically said interfaces will rejoin at with ice cream.
I think that's foolish.
A problem that needs solving? I mean, you know, people have their iPhone and their iPad or their Droid and their Zoom
because of your data connection. So if you have an iPhone and iPad, you have to pay two monthly bills to get two services.
Right.
If you have just the phone, you plug it into the tablet.
Well,
it's just one month
until AT&T gets hold of it. And they charge tethering to get data on your tablet.
I don't think it's not going to be tethering because it's going to be the same device.
Same device. The thing that's
1 3G card.
The other thing that's interesting about this is then you have less management. So you don't have, like, right now.
Oh, you're not like keeping two separate sets of apps.
When you plug in your iPhone and sync that and then sync your tablet, it's going to copy all those phone apps that aren't formatted right for the iPad onto the iPad. It's a giant pain. It illustrates the problem with the sync situation.
So I walk around with my phone all day, then come home, dock it with my tablet shell, and now I've got a nice tablet experience.
Or just Sam, all your media. I think the media is going to be stuck on the phone. It's not like there's going to be an extra SD card in the tablet that has extra videos because you don't want videos on your phone.
I think it's going to be 64 gigs of memory on the phone.
Yeah. I like the idea. I just kind of feel like much like the H. I don't think the Atrix is going to take off either. It certainly doesn't seem to have so far. I think
they did not do it for future products.
Well, they didn't price it right the first go round, but hopefully that'll rectify itself.
I just kind of feel like there's a gimmick novelty aspect to this, and you know, gimmick novelty products never really blow up big in tech.
Well, there is a definite market for that kind of device in the form of people who don't want to have a real computer but need something with a keyboard.
Yeah.
I think that the keeping the tablet OS on the device is a better direction than trying to shell out to a poor performing Ubuntu preboot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's my feeling.
No. Software-wise, it will work.
Yeah.
From a hardware standpoint, if you look at the design, because they had some photos, I think it bulges out a little bit, the phone, because
It's almost like the Zoom where there's a thick back. Yeah. One edge is thicker than the other, although this looks like it's the top edge.
Because if you're going to put a phone, no matter how thin the phone is, into a tablet shell and still have the cover on it, it's going to be thick. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be the ideal size for a tablet. And I actually like having both a tablet and a phone like I'm using right now because it's how I multitask. I have Twitter on the phone and I have the web browser on the tablet.
I think it's a clever idea.
Not paying attention in three ways. That's kind of impressive.
I'm multitasking.
You know, the problem with it is obviously it's entering two markets at once that are both complete bloodbaths right now.
Right.
It's difficult for even the best guys to distinguish themselves.
They are distinguishing themselves because Asus with the Transformer that got so much buzz with their tablet laptop hybrid.
Yeah.
So now it's a phone tablet hybrid.
I mean, these guys are all about crossing the streams. Like, they want a tablet that's a phone. They want a laptop that's a tablet.
I mean, the thing that's interesting is at least they're trying something other than just shipping a Zoom clone, which is what everybody else is doing. Yeah. I mean, given the choice between a stock Android experience that's just like a normal slate or a stock Android experience I can jam my phone into and only pay one data plan, that's kind of compelling. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what carriers bite in the U.S. because Asus has traditionally not had very good carrier support on phones in the U.S.
Well, the big problem with the Atrix was performance because
– Well, this bypasses that entirely because a phone CPU and a tablet CPU are the same. There's no bad reboot situation.
And I think they want to get into this market now so that, you know, one generation down or two generations down when you have quad-core phones, where there's more power in the phone than you really need, then this will make a lot more sense.
Right. I mean, that's a really good point.
I'm still kind of unclear on what Norm was saying, though. Like, if when the phone is the phone, then it's running, you know, Froyo or Gingerbread or whatever.
No. It'll be running. The whole thing is ice cream, I'm pretty sure.
Whatever the latest phone, you know,
so
version
I think
of Android.
Ice cream sandwich, sorry.
Right. But then when you dock it with the tablet, then does it somehow become Honeycomb? Because you want, like, the full tablet experience.
Ice cream sandwich will unify Gingerbread and the Honeycomb experience.
Everything's going to be like Honeycomb.
Is that why they went with sandwich? Because it's sandwiching in the is this another clever naming concept?
I think they went with sandwich because they could make a little Android-shaped ice cream sandwich for the slide.
Okay.
She could have been ice cream sundae.
Yeah, but that doesn't look right. It's going to have weird humps.
I'm still unclear about the UI is going to be. I am not convinced that the Honeycomb UI works on phones.
I think the Honeycomb – I think what will happen is it'll be like iOS where there's a slightly different version of the UI but that is spiritually the same and uses the same kind of Chrome and stuff like that.
I mean, look, the I think this is one of those things. The concept is intriguing. You're going to need to see it
working
to really know.
Yeah. And without carrier deals in the US, then it's a non-issue for our market. So that's the other
– I still think – I have huge problems with the way Android manages apps because – it's the desktop. Like, going from iOS to Android is really tough because there is no app menu in iOS. Your desktop is your apps menu.
Right.
I think that's one of the worst things about iOS.
Well, I think it's one of the best because it keeps me focused. I don't want to have 70 apps on the phone.
But you can do the exact
only
same
keep
thing
the ones.
On Android.
On Android, because it's the desktop slash start menu
Yeah.
metaphor,
You just bring the stuff you want out on the desktop.
But it feels like it slows down the desktop.
It doesn't, though.
It totally feels like it.
Hmm.
And you only have 5 to 7 screens.
Well, yeah, but
you're a little more picky because you also have widgets in managing that. End up just having everything in the apps menu. But that application folder is ABC order, and there's no way
you can change that.
Part of it is just what you're used to. But I always find it jarring. Like you showed me the Infuse before the show, when I pick up any Android phone, I always find it jarring because I go from iOS, which, you know, it's a single layer. Everything's in a nice, neat grid. It's all apps. You know, I get it, and I understand that way of doing it.
Right.
If you've got a lot of apps, yeah, you can be scrolling back and forth a lot. I try to keep no more than like 3 or 4. I don't need that many apps. I've usually only got like 3 pages of stuff on my phone at any time. You pick up an Android phone, and an Android phone always kind of feels like like that guy who doesn't know how to keep his desktop tidy. Like there's fucking, it's all very higgledy-piggledy. There's apps over here and stuff on this page and stuff on that. What's wrong with that?
Never heard that one before.
Higgledy-piggledy.
Wow.
English people will know what that means.
Yeah, so I mean, it's definitely like the thing I have a bunch of apps because of the apps of the week thing, which we've talked about a lot. I'm not going to go into that again. But basically, I just search on iOS because the page after page of apps is fucking – I have the stuff that I use regularly, like Kindle and Twitter and Facebook and Instacast and that stuff on the first page. And then everything else I just search. And I have a couple of folders for the games that I replay regularly on the second page.
I don't get people that need like 10 pages of apps. I mean, how fucking busy and interesting is their life? I've got 3 pages of apps here, and honestly – half the stuff on here I hardly ever use. The first 2 pages, you know, because I order it that the stuff that I use most often is like on the first page and the second page. You go further back, you get stuff that, you know, I don't really
Fandango.
Use. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, on my first couple of pages here, I've got, you know, Kindle and, the
tiers.
Camera and stuff that I actually
tiers,
use.
Like, first page is stuff every day.
But that's the way I use Android. I put the stuff that I use most commonly on the home screen. Everything else is in the menu, and I just drill down when I need it.
Right.
And it's also nice because that means I don't have to see the shovelware that they put on all of these fucking phones, including the Infuse, which is a little bit of a bummer.
Yeah.
So a bunch of other stuff happens at Computex. They announced all the motherboards. The new Intel chipset boards are coming, and I think those have all been announced now, or many of them have been announced. Right, Norm?
Yes.
We're not going to talk about that here because I don't want to talk about motherboard chipsets on the podcast. But what we are going to talk about is D9.
What's that?
D9 is Walt Mossberg and Kara Swisser's All Things D conference. It's happening right now someplace in Southern California. I think Palm Springs or something, someplace posh. And it's basically like a CEO conference. So it is a bunch of press and a bunch of CEOs.
Oh, is this thing in the Wall Street Journal?
This is the Wall Street Journal.
Okay,
yeah. So it started yesterday with Eric Schmidt talking about Google and things and all this, like what he sees is market and the competition. So it's kind of interesting because what he described as their primary competition, as Google's primary competition, were 4 companies, including Google.
He had a name for these.
Yeah, the Gang of 4, which is a reference to something that I'm not familiar with. And a band also, I think, right?
I don't know.
Yeah. The Gang of 4 is Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook.
He sees them as the 4 big ones.
Are the 4.
These are the ones that are entrenched in the businesses that they do really well. And he specifically names Amazon for retail, Google for search and
information.
Yep. Facebook for identity. And what's the last
Apple
one?
Apple was for products.
Apple for beautiful products.
Beautiful like
design
products.
Said,
so yeah. Microsoft, conspicuous by its absence.
No Microsoft, no Twitter.
No Yahoo.
Well, Twitter's too small.
Well, Twitter likes to think that it's
Twitter is small, but it likes has a very large
Facebook
kind of footprint in the world now.
Well, what we'll get to Twitter in a minute. What Twitter announced is that they're Twitter didn't announce this, but Twitter the thing I heard was that 13% of U.S. males, U.S. adults, are on Twitter now, have a Twitter account.
Yeah.
So that's.
But how many are really active though? Because there's all those other statistics about people have those accounts. But look, like 80% of people that start a Twitter account like aren't using it 3 months later.
I think there are a lot of people who set it up, follow the 5 people that they're most interested in, probably celebrities or news people or something like that, and then don't actually post. I like looking at the people who are following me, a lot of people have like 20 people they follow and no followers.
Yeah.
And no tweets.
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point is that you can quote unquote have a Twitter account, but just be a consumer. You just like to follow lots of people. You don't necessarily want to post anything.
Yeah, but, I know a lot of people do that.
But those people are just as valuable in the eyes of advertisers.
More so,
they're the eyeballs that you want to get at. They're the people that are consuming the things you may want them to look at.
So Eric Schmidt talks about these
Game
four
of
companies.
Four. Yeah. He said Microsoft has Office and Windows.
Wait, now, is he saying that these are his principal competition, or is he just saying these are the more significant players? Okay.
Yeah, these are the players. And these are – when they're – the idea – I don't think he explicitly said this, but the idea – the feeling I got was when they think about markets, then these are the people that they think of as relevant and the big players.
Right.
It's interesting because a couple of these companies actually work together and have strategic partnerships.
All of them work together. I mean, that's
the thing. Amazon, I think, stands apart a little more.
Well, Amazon spends a lot of money on Google. Amazon has a tight relationship with Android. So, you know, there's a lot of cross-pollination here. Apple, of course, uses Google for Maps and Search, which Schmidt also confirmed has been renewed for iOS.
Right.
So that your Maps app on iPhone is going to continue being Google Maps, not Bing in the near future.
Default search will still be Google.
Facebook, of course, has Google relationships, has Amazon relationships, has Apple relationships.
Yeah,
they're everywhere. And they're supposedly making their own phone as well, so we'll see about that. And then, of course, Microsoft, he said, makes a lot of money from Office and Windows.
He says that's going to be a – what is it? One of those
– a flywheel.
Flywheel that's going to keep them going for a couple decades more, at least.
Yeah.
Entrenchment
and implied that they are the thing that Microsoft hates more than anything else, which is that they've turned into IBM. So,
I mean, that's certainly the way it seems to be going.
Yeah, not. I mean, Microsoft. I still think Microsoft has a couple of years to kind of turn their thing around, but we'll see. Talked about a couple other interesting things. One of them is that Google doesn't usually develop technologies and then sit on them. So. For example, one of the things that they have developed and one of the few things that they've developed that they then pulled before it reached market was facial recognition.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, you could walk around with a camera attached to a Google phone and recognize faces of people in the public. And they pulled that because of privacy concerns. I'm kind of glad about that. It's very Minority Report, that.
I want that technology out in the open.
I would love to be able to go to a party, have a little camera on, and have something feeding me the names of all the people whose names I can never remember because I'm terrible.
Well, it's never going to be like a consumer level product. It's going to be enterprise. It's going to be for governments and
it'll
and
filter businesses. Down.
The amazing thing about Google is that for a company that started doing one simple thing, which is web search.
That's not really a simple thing, in fairness.
Well, no, as we're all old enough to remember the days of Lycos web crawler and
Alta Vista,
the dark days before Google.
Jeeves.
Ask Jeeves.
How many search engines can you name?
I used to.
Let's go.
Like back in the
challenge
day,
accepted.
Well, hold on. So let's go back. What's your earliest memory of the internet?
AOL chat room.
I had a VAX account and was trying to send email to somebody on Bitnet and could not make that work. Like that, my first experience with the internet was not being able to figure out a way to route email out of our VAX system across the internet to somebody else's Bitnet.
That was
I'm not talking about BBSs and stuff. I'm talking about
This was at college. This was a Unix shell account.
Wow.
We had the choice between getting a VAX account or a Unix shell account. I chose the VAX account because I knew how
what
to use
what was the first web browser you ever used?
Netflix 2.
I don't think there were.
I think mine was Netscape Navigator.
Yeah, Netscape Navigator.
Very first experience with internet. Going to a friend's house in Cub Scouts. So it's elementary school. And get an AOL chat room talking about Jim Carrey, loving Jim Carrey movies.
Wow.
All right.
Distinctly remember
that. Wow, that had to be in the early 90s.
Yeah.
The first time I had a slip account where you could dial in and then, it opened up the terminal and you would type in execute slip or whatever. And then all of a sudden the computer was just on the internet instead of just – like working through links or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember using Archie and Gopher and all that stuff, which was horrible. But then, links.
But in terms of search, I remember Alta Vista and I think Lycos Web Crawler were the two search engines that I knew the most commonly.
Web Crawler.
Lycos was pretty good.
Lycos for music also. Remember Hotbot?
Hotbot was the
thing. Oh, yeah. Shit. Yeah.
That was one of the first
Jeeves.
Aggregators. Jeeves. Which became Ask.
Jeeves was a search engine.
Became just Ask. And Ask Jeeves, its gimmick was you could type in like a question in plain English.
Yeah.
But it never really worked.
Never ever worked.
Right. So each had like a special thing. Like web crawler, I think – I'm not sure if that was an aggregator, but – I remember like Yahoo search, you have to actually submit links.
Well, Yahoo was all human, done by humans at that
point. Right. Like there was a link at the bottom that you say you submit your website to Yahoo.
Wow.
And they would index it. Web crawler, it was.
Took 3 months usually.
Web based, or it was algorithm based, but you still had to submit it and then it would.
You all had to submit to all of these.
Right.
And I just remember volumes and volumes of just awful GeoCities. Type an Angel Fire type pages. Yeah.
Well, GeoCities is all gone. You could download. I think someone did download all the GeoCities sites as an archive before they killed it, before Yahoo killed it finally. AltaVista lasted for so long because of the Babelfish.
Before
Google Translate, there was a place to go for translations.
So how did Google – there were all these different sites and all this fragmentation. How did Google come along and become the one ring to rule them
all? PageRank. PageRank was the key. So everybody else was – you'd submit a site – and then they'd go and index it, and they'd look at all the links, and they'd look at all the words, and it was just basically a giant-ass keyword index.
So they just had a better algorithm?
Yeah, Google – the thing that Sergey Brin and Eric and
Larry Page
– sorry. Completely blank there. Well, the thing that those guys came up with was the idea that links are essentially voting. So when you add a link to another site, that's you giving an implied – upvote to that link. If in the world of Facebook, like you linking from your site to another site is essentially you saying, "Hey, I like this site."
Right.
So then, what they did was went through and figured out how to crawl all the pages, look at the links, and determine a value for each site based on the number of inbound links to it. Right. This was the beginning, and of course, it's much more complex now. There's a lot more factors, and PageRank has been consistently devalued over the years, but. Basically, if you look at a site, if you look at, say, the NewYorkTimes.com, that site has millions and millions of inbound links. So it's going to be better than the Hoboken Journal, which is a local newspaper and doesn't cover worldwide stories. And it only has 20,000 inbound links or 2 million inbound links or whatever. So by building a thing – and the other thing they realized is that computing power was going to get very cheap. Storage was going to get very cheap. And they looked at where the curves were on that kind of technological growth and invested heavily at the right time to take big advantage of it.
It's kind of cool that, decades from now we'll be able to, say to people like we'll be the Abe Simpsons of the day, saying, we remember the Big Bang of the internet. Like we were around before there was an internet, at least for the public. Mm-hmm. And we remember the very, the painful birth pangs of it, like before Google. Before all these, before the big pillars of the internet that we know
now
today.
That we have the, we're talking about four pillars, right? The big four. I don't see a world where we're going to have, a dozen of these pillars. It's going to be six.
No, there'll just be fewer and fewer pillars, if anything.
Yeah. Now, also, we talk about search engines. What about ISPs? Dial-up ISPs.
Oh.
Those came and gone.
I never had a dial-up ISP that wasn't the university. Because I could get ISDN through them, and then I went straight to DSL.
It was Earthlink.
Yeah.
Net Zero.
Yeah, I had Earthlink.
I had US Internet when I was at home at summertime. So the thing about the search results, though, the reason Google took off is the search results were good. And one of the things
they just made a better product.
I mean, there was the pages loaded fast, and the results were good, which were the two. AltaVista would sometimes take 3 seconds to come back with results, which sucked.
Right.
Even made worse by dial-up. So one of the things that Walt Mossberg and Eric Schmidt were talking about is quality of results. And during this conversation, Eric Schmidt came back and said, hey, Bing is better than Google at
very few things.
Direct answers.
Yes.
So for example, when you type into Google at the end of every podcast to find out how many seconds were in the podcast, I look at the time that iTunes or GarageBand gives me where it says it's 2 hours, 4 minutes, and 36 seconds. I could just multiply those things by 60 a couple of times and figure that out and then add them up. But it's easier to just type 2 hours, 4 minutes, and 36 seconds in seconds into Google, and then it gives me the number of seconds, right? You can do that for many, many things. You can say, what time is it in Colombia right now? And it'll tell you what time it is in Colombia.
Right.
What he says is that Bing does better direct answers.
Such as
a wider variety, I think, is what the index.
It's a very, very narrow search case. It's because Bing.
Like if I want to know how many tablespoons are in a cup or something like that, then Bing's better.
Well, also
at that.
Bing has integration with Wolfram Alpha, so the semantic search stuff, which I think is algorithm based. But some of the Bing search results are actually user inputted. Like they have people who like,
or they scrape them from pages or whatever.
It's not scraped. That's a big difference. Google's all scraping. Google's all algorithm and scraping.
Right.
Because they look at web pages that have these senses and then associate the answers with those, but there's no human behind it.
They look for the question and the answer on the same page.
Okay. And then they find the most pages with that pairing, and that's what they give you.
I remember
Bing does it a little differently.
In the early days of Bing, you know, I tried a few searches on it. You know, you want to try anything new, and I didn't feel comfortable with the results. Like, it felt weird, and I don't know. You know, and in a world where Google is now just so ubiquitous, like, I mean, that's just what we use now. I use Chrome, and when I do a web, and when I don't even
you don't even think about it. You just type it in the location bar.
Yeah, I don't even go to I can't remember the last time I did a search actually at the Google homepage. I just type it right into my Chrome address bar. Maybe I should give Bing another shot and see what the results are like. I'm not unsatisfied with what I'm already getting from Google, so I don't really feel a need to change.
So this is the thing that's changed, though, is the Google results, the rise of the content farms and demand, the things like Demand Media and those places where they're paying where they algorithmically determine what content they can build to generate revenue based on Google ad projected Google ad traffic, has increased the volume of crap on the web and has kind of polluted Google search results. So this is one of the things Mossberg hit Eric Schmidt on, and they talked. Google updated the search algorithms earlier this year. We talked about that on the podcast to remove a lot of the content farms, the Mahalos and the Demands and all those guys, so that when you type a question like how do I build a kite, then instead of getting 25 pages that were generated for $4 each, you get arguably what's the best, you know, how to build a kite how to on the web. But the quality of Google search results has consistently gone down since their initial launch, I think.
Well, the Panda update.
The Panda update helped.
Yes.
But they're
saying Mossberg called them out on that.
Right. I mean, that Panda update only hit, I think, 12% of pages or something like that. So it's not a universal fix. It's something that they're definitely aware of. And Eric Schmidt said that they roll 200 or 300 updates to the search algorithm a quarter usually that are silent and they don't tell people about it. It just kind of changes magically. So that's what Eric Schmidt talked about.
He also talked about his biggest failure.
Oh, his biggest failure was social.
Failing at social.
Right. We know that. That's no surprise.
They have failed at social.
Yes.
Right. Like Google is not a social company.
Buzz was not good.
Right.
What was the other
Orkut.
Thing?
Orkut.
Wave.
Wave was not good.
I liked Wave, but it was not a universal. It was a tool, not a social network.
So is this a big fail? I mean, you know, we live in an age now where when we think about the internet, social communities and social media is such a huge part of it that if Google has not been able to scoop out any piece of that action, have they fucked up?
I think in some way, yeah, because they had a large user base. I mean, if you look at it, like Gmail is the perfect jumping off point for a social network, right? There's a lot of people, they're invested, they use time. You know what the social graph looks like for those users because they send email to each other. However, when they rolled out Buzz, they really fucked that up badly.
Well, Google's also very cautious about how much information they take from you.
Well, privacy. Now they are.
And it feels like all the Buzz stuff, people are really freaking out about that. Because with everything on Facebook and Twitter, nothing is algorithm-based. You what you input in.
You know.
Yeah, you know exactly. I mean, to some extent, you know exactly what Facebook knows about you.
The only algorithm is who should you follow?
Right.
So
Facebook's not indexed on Google. Keep that in mind too.
The thing Schmidt said is that there's no, like, they don't have to be good at social because they can just, you know, leverage other people's, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or whatever. You know, everybody wants Google indexing their sites because they want Google search results, because that's 40% of inbound traffic to every site on the internet pretty much. You know, there's no reason Facebook and Google can't work together to give Google the social stuff that it needs. The mistake, he said, was missing the context of who your relationship is with. I mean, that's where email breaks down. Anybody can send me an email whether they're my friend or not, because email's a totally open system. The reason I check Twitter DMs in the morning is because only the people I follow on Twitter can send me a DM, and as a result, I don't get any spam at all there.
Yeah.
So
right.
If there was a way to integrate Facebook and Gmail without having to just use Facebook, I would totally do that.
But yeah, you know what? I think in terms of Facebook, I think they've failed in some ways too. Like Facebook Mail, who uses that? Like they're
nobody
big
does.
Messaging, yeah. Facebook. No, I don't think anyone wants to have Facebook as their homepage.
No one wants to admit it, at least.
And I would be fine with Google being my homepage and as a hub for how I interact with the internet, I don't want Facebook to be that.
Maybe it's just me, but does anyone else feel like Facebook is starting to feel a bit stale and a bit uncool and almost a bit MySpace-y these days? I found myself...
They're doing everything they can.
I used to be like
to prevent that from happening.
80% Facebook, 20% Twitter. And now I'm actually that ratio is reversed, I found.
Well, so the way I use the two services. I don't use Facebook very much because I made poor choices in the people I made friends with on Facebook.
That, you know, that saying about Twitter is a great way to like people you don't know, and Facebook is a great way to hate people you do know is totally true.
Twitter is about expanding my social network.
But also
Facebook
is about maintaining the
network I have.
Twitter is an ambient feed
where
you leave on the background and information comes at you. Facebook is you actively seek out.
You've got to decide to go there and see what are all my friends up to.
Deeper. Like Twitter, it's very shallow. I mean, it links 140 characters.
I like shallow, though. I like bite-sized nuggets.
Exactly, because it comes as an endless stream.
It's digestible.
Yeah. With Facebook, there is the feed, but it's like, oh, here is a gallery of 200 photos my friend uploaded. It's deep.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, because Twitter, just moments ago, before we started recording this podcast.
Moments ago.
This is we're recording on Wednesday. It'll be up on Thursday. Announced that they are doing native video and photo sharing. So, yeah, right now
there are two announcements. Yes, that's the second part of the announcement. Yep.
What was the first part of the announcement?
Firefox for Twitter search.
Oh,
we'll talk about that in just a second.
Post a video, it won't have to be like on YFrog or Twitpic.
Yeah, right now it goes to YFrog or Twitpic or Image Shack or any number of other places. There was a big kerfuffle a couple weeks ago because I think it was Twitpic basically took over rights in perpetuity to your images when you upload them to the service, which a lot of people kind of don't like. You know, it's kind of lame. So basically, over the coming months, Twitter is going to integrate Facebook and video sharing, photo and video sharing with their clients and with the web interface, which is kind of a pretty big swipe at Facebook. Because if you think about it, the majority of people who are using Facebook, that's the way they share photos and video with their friends. And the reason they do it is because you can say, hey, I only want to share this with my friends. I don't want to make it public. So you don't post the picture of your kid in the bathtub on the open internet so that every pervert in the world can find it.
Yeah. The other thing – I mean, the other big difference is that Facebook, it feels like there's more of a permanent record. Like if you want to find something from 2 weeks ago from somebody, it's easy, whereas Twitter's much more ephemeral. Like it's just a constant train of thought. And
it's a river.
The stuff is there, but like if you want to find an old tweet that somebody posted like a week ago, that's more of a hassle.
Occasionally a log floats by.
Yes.
But – once it's out of sight, it's
just
gone.
It's just a river of internet dreams.
Stuff. Yeah, the thing I like about Twitter more than Facebook is the one to many relationship. So, and this applies to people like us probably more than normal folks,
right?
But it actually works on the other side too, because like on Facebook, I'm never ever going to fan. I'm never going to say, hey, I want to know everything that, I don't know, Albert Brooks is doing, right? I'm never going to be his fan on Facebook because I don't want that shit clogging up my feed. On Twitter, because it's a relatively high volume feed, I'll totally sign up for that because the one time that I see it, it's something interesting and I like Albert Brooks.
Well, the big difference is a relationship on Facebook has to be mutual. We have to agree to follow each other.
Well, except for the fan pages.
Right.
So like the tested page, there's no mute.
But for regular mortals like us,
it's one to one.
If I want you to see my shit, I have to agree to see your shit.
Exactly.
Whereas on Twitter, there are thousands of people who see my shit and I don't look at their shit.
Right. So you can.
That's like saying shit.
You're saying it's very fecal of you. Yeah. Anyway, we've talked about this a lot. What's the Facebook Firefox, Twitter Firefox thing, Norm?
So now there's a version of Firefox with Twitter. Where if you can
like rock me it,
well, rock melt, you mean
rock me it?
Is that what it is?
I think it's either.
I thought it was rock melt.
Rock melt. I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure. I think it's rock me it.
Rock me it. It could be either. Wait, let's do some fact checking.
Oh, we're killing the podcast. Rock me it.
Really?
Oh, is it
the capital I?
Oh, it looks like an L.
Yeah, exactly.
See, another bad name.
I've been calling it rock melt the entire time.
That's bad naming. They need to get on that.
Oh, this is typography problems.
I mean, rock me it is just shit anyway.
Yeah, let alone, rock me it.
It's like, not even the fact that it looks like rock melt. It's just
how
that it's
many
crap.
Times have you melted rocks in your lives?
But it sounds cooler than
it's two rock, syllables.
What does rock me it mean? It means nothing.
I think it's a thing that helps.
We got to ask Anna.
Oh, don't,
because she's the one who uses this.
By the way, who the fuck uses LinkedIn?
Business people.
It's for headhunters.
That's why it was worth like $13 billion. Yeah. I mean, what the fuck?
It's the modern resume. Yeah. So instead of having a resume, you just update your LinkedIn thing and you're done.
Okay.
Like, I get recruiters bothering me all the fucking time because my LinkedIn profile is...
Okay. But it's for suits.
It's for suits.
All right, good.
It doesn't apply to you.
Okay.
Okay, Twitter for with Firefox.
Yeah, there's a version of Firefox with Twitter integration, which means not only in the search bar you can have search Twitter, but even in the smart bar you can just type in hashtags or @ and it will have search results. And there's a little icon, I think a tab that will blink when your Twitter – when you get new tweets. So integration between Firefox and Twitter.
All right.
Speaking of social networking stuff, this is a little off topic, but kind of. I signed up for Milkshake the other day.
What's
that? Have you guys seen that? It's MLK. There's no vowels, basically. So it's a terrible name.
So it's Milkshake.
Basically, it's photo sharing. But instead of being for photos that you take because you're a person that goes out in the world, it's for shit that you find on the internet that you think is funny. So it's like – it's lighter than a Tumblr, which is kind of the traditional place for that kind of thing.
Right.
And it integrates with Twitter. So if you post links to pictures in Twitter, it'll just grab them and integrate them so that there's a constant feed of funny pictures of dogs and cats on the internet. I'm not sure that I think it's a good thing, but I thought it was kind of neat.
I saw Norm started using something new as well. Social Cam, I thought was interesting.
Oh, yeah, it's actually pretty cool.
So you just shoot videos and it just goes straight to your Facebook?
Well, it's Justin TV app.
Right.
So instead of doing live Justin TV streams, which, I mean, if you don't have 6,000 followers for me, 8,000 followers for Gary, 20,000 followers for Will. 23,000 followers for Will.
I don't know how that happened.
I have no idea.
Having the Will Smith Twitter handle helps probably.
Hey, every few months I post.
That's what it is. Let's be honest.
Dude, we can
every time. Every time Will Smith's trailer, the real Will Smith's trailer, gets
Will
gets like 500 new followers.
I guarantee if we opened up Will's reply feed and his Twitter right now, within the first five things, you're going to see someone thinking that he's the other Will Smith.
Oh, this weekend there was, you know, that site that has the, like, whenever you type a celebrity name in.
Oh, the fake death?
The fake death site. Fuck me. There was a Will Smith died in New Zealand.
Yeah, I saw it.
I basically just turned off Twitter this weekend because I was like, I can't have a conversation with somebody. It's like 4 or 5 a minute.
Doesn't it kind of bug you? Doesn't it keep you awake at night to know that your Twitter fame is a castle built on sand? That it's
I'm going
to
think
you're someone
now,
else.
Right now, I'm going to tweet, hey guys, how many of you don't realize that I'm – I get a lot of people saying, hey, I realize you're not the actor Will Smith, but I really like what you're tweeting.
You know, it's good that you have 23,000 followers because you're close to breaking the don't have more tweets than followers rule that I have in my head.
No way. I have 16,000 tweets.
Exactly. 16,000 tweets.
Oh, shit. I better make sure I'm not on the wrong side of that rule.
The thing is that I think that should count at replies and
it
tweets.
It does count at replies.
Separately. No. I think at replies should count in your total.
Nope. Retweets, at replies, it's Twitter.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh, Gary.
I'm way on the wrong side.
Oh, no.
7,574 followers, but I have 9,846 tweets.
Oh, slow it down. Oversaturation.
I've just got too much to say for myself. That's the problem.
You guys do know I'm not Will Smith the actor, right?
Hey, Will.
Yeah.
Nice tweet. I also hear that you are very looking forward to My Little Pony new season.
Yeah, what's that about,
I know.
Dude?
Seriously.
Did I leave my computer unlocked?
What's with you and this fascination with My Little Pony?
Fuck.
That's not cool.
Fucking Ryan Davis. I changed the wallpaper on the Bombcast account for our iMac. For the podcast, I acted that My Little Pony wallpaper.
I can't watch an innocent man go hang for this. All I'll say, Will, is anytime you give me an Android phone to check out, you should make sure
it's turned off.
Yeah. I have been victim to this as well.
Yeah, it's done that too. I've done that to everybody. At least you didn't
post something
about
it. Don't leave me unsupervised.
Yeah. It's good to know.
With your test phones.
Oh, good to know. What were we talking about? Okay, social cam.
Yes.
So,
so it's like Justin.
It is
like live streaming
and
post something
by,
once it's finished.
One at a time, kids.
So, as
Norm,
with Justin TV's app, when you do a live stream, the quality could be crap because it actually doesn't save on your phone. It's just streaming to Justin TV.
Right.
And if you have bad reception, it's terrible.
Right.
So with social cam, it actually saves your phone and it'll upload after you're finished.
Yeah.
Plus, you can link with Twitter and Facebook, so it'll post on your Twitter feeds,
cool.
And you could tag people.
Oh, that's nice. Can you tag Twitter users or do they have to be social graph users?
No, you can tag Facebook users.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Now,
tie to your Facebook.
Is that doing something that other apps haven't done? It seems like being able to record a video and post it to Facebook seems like something that is not a new idea. Someone must have already been.
No, there are tons of apps to do it, but this one's run by Justin TV, so it's hosted on Justin TV.
Right.
But on your Facebook page, you can play it in the feed.
Right.
And it'll do the automatic embed.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, good quality.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I liked it. So anyway, I'm going to stop looking at Twitter now. Jonathan Kaplan at D9. This was super interesting. Jonathan Kaplan's the dude who started Flip and then sold to Cisco. And then Cisco killed the Flip. And then he left Cisco before that happened.
He made his money and got out.
He did make a lot of money, I would assume. And they asked him why Cisco killed the Flip if he knew.
Mm.
And he said basically, look, Flip was – he said he didn't know. Didn't know the internal reasoning, but
– doesn't give a shit. Too busy spending his money.
As a Cisco shareholder, he's okay with it.
Yep.
Because, you know, he wants them to make good business decisions.
Yep.
And that he thinks that probably Flip was good for $1 billion net revenue, which is chump change for a company as big as Cisco. And that they – rather than sell it and give up the IP, they're probably going to continue using the technology developed for Flip in other products that they're going to continue making that have bigger possibilities.
Still seems – I mean, even for a company as big as Cisco, it still seems like a lot of money to spend for a brand that you then kill almost immediately afterwards.
I think we'll see Flip come back. I think we'll see stuff branded Flip again in the future.
All right.
Flip will return. Like, perfect world for me would be to buy a phone, an Android phone with a Flip camera built in. Like, they're using their image stabilization and microphone stuff.
Yeah, and it does – I mean, as long as you don't let it, you know, sit around for too long, saying, like, powered by Flip or whatever would have some value.
Yeah.
They should do that. They should license the name and the technology out to other phone makers.
Anyway, we'll see. Other interesting thing about this, Jonathan Kaplan's new thing is called Melt. What he's doing –
or is it called Me It and we just don't know?
What he's doing, it's crazy. It's grilled cheese sandwiches.
Come on.
I shit you not, dude. He is they got enough money to launch 25 shops, I think, where you download a smartphone app, you order a grilled cheese sandwich, and they either deliver it to your house or you walk in and just pick it up. And they're looking at like Chipotle and high end fast food.
Hold everything. This is it.
This is the end.
This
right?
is the fucking omega point of the internet. We have this is it.
You want to?
This is the greatest megaton event. Fuck the iPhone 5. Don't care about anything else now. This
smartphone based cheese sandwich
this
delivery.
This is it.
Do you think this is a bad idea? Or are you being?
I can't even tell
where you're at.
No, I'm 100% sincere.
You think this?
Everyone
is the best
else should
idea
just
ever.
Pack up and go home now.
Right.
This is what DARPA when the first Air Force guys were sitting around going, what? Where is this ultimately going?
We've reached the end of the internet.
The gray goop.
Yes.
We've reached the end of the internet beyond this point. Right, there is no more.
So let me get this straight. Are they actually going to build retail locations?
There are retail locations.
Okay.
There are 20 of them in process right now.
Now, can I just walk in off the street without a smartphone and buy a grilled cheese?
Of course.
Okay.
But then you have to wait in line like a schmuck. So this gives you a bypass. And also they'll do delivery.
So I can order ahead of time and go in and pick up at an appointed time.
$5 for a fancy grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah.
You can get a combo for $8, and I assume that they'll also sell tomato soup.
Now, what, you say they're doing deals with like Chipotle to like get into existing locations?
No.
First of all,
they're looking at the market cap of Chipotle and saying, hey, we would like to make that kind of money.
Oh.
I did not know, and you were there for this, I did not know about the grilled cheese tomato soup combo until Maker Faire.
What the fuck?
What?
That's
like peanut butter and jelly. Those two things just go together.
Pop culture holes in my head.
Is
this being a child of immigrants?
No. This is a child of immigrants thing.
Okay.
I never had it growing up. Anna got it at Maker Faire, grilled cheese.
If you have a really good grilled cheese sandwich
and a
nice piping hot cup of thick, creamy tomato soup,
and you dip the
grilled cheese in the soup eat it, and it's the ultimate comfort food.
I did not.
And it's all American.
Maybe that's why.
I'm going to see if there's a Melt here. We might have to take a field trip.
Hmm. Well, wait, are these up already or is this just
– there are a few of them open already.
I mean,
if
there's 20, then
what are we doing?
I think they're in New York.
Oh, fuck.
God damn it.
Gary,
you're going to appreciate this.
What?
The Attorney General, and I thought this is honestly like an Onion story, but no, it's on Reuters. Attorney General demands more episodes of The Wire.
Really?
Or a movie.
Wow. Wow, Baltimore crime. That popped.
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
Okay, so
he has my vote.
More stuff from D9.
Well, wait.
Are we back on the
Do not give short shrift to this cheese story. This is big this is big news.
Norm, have you downloaded the Melt app for your iPhone yet?
Not yet.
Is there an app?
I believe there's an app.
I'm getting it now.
I am very excited about this. You know, there's a place that there's places that do this in San Francisco. Like there was a there were two girls that had an apartment off of Dolores Park where you could order a cookie and they would drop it like a drug delivery. You know, on a you could pay $2 for a cookie.
Oh, and it comes down in a bucket.
They'd lower it in a bucket.
Right.
And
two girls, one bucket.
Oh, come on.
It was coming.
So that's what they said. Okay, I typed in melt and I got Face Melter Pro.
It may be an Android
melting
only app right
of,
now.
What?
It may only be an Android app.
Hold on. This is unacceptable.
Yeah, nothing makes a good podcast like downloading some shit to your phone.
Look, it is Rock Me and it totally looks like Rock Melt.
Yeah, I know.
I typed in melt and still got Rock Me as a search result. That's how wrong
it is. Rock Melt and it's there. Rock Melt.
I'm telling you, it's all wrong. Are you sure it's Rock Me It?
I have no idea at this point.
Hold on. I think it's
fact checking.
No, it's an L because it's lowercase. It would have a little dot on the top if it was an I. It's not Rock Me It, you fool.
Oh my god. What does Google say?
It says Rock Me It.
Oh wait, oh no, because it's capital I.
Yeah, it's a capital I.
It's fucked up either way.
Right, it's ridiculous.
There's no scenario that I like here.
God damn. Helvetica.
It says Rock Me It.
Okay. All right. Yeah, it's all fucked up.
Yeah, this is the German's fault.
Why can't I find this melt thing?
I don't know. It may not be out yet. Be a real app yet.
All right, but okay, so look, I love the idea because I love grilled cheese.
And you like getting things from the internet. It's like everything you like in one fell swoop.
Yeah, I love food delivery.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people that bemoans the death of Cosmo, which I thought was the greatest site ever. I can't believe they couldn't make money on that enterprise. But
I don't remember that.
Cosmo? I know why they couldn't make money on that enterprise, because somebody would call up super stoned at 3 o'clock in the morning and be like, hey, man, I need a copy of Minority Report on DVD, and I want 4 pints of Ben & Jerry's and some porn.
Yep.
And bring me a sack of weed.
Yep.
And then all the delivery guys got arrested for delivering weed.
Oh, is that how it worked?
No, but the thing was unsustainable because everybody would order like $6 worth of stuff, pay the $8 delivery fee or whatever it was, and you only ever did it when you were fucked up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Well, it was like Webvan, except Webvan was timed.
Webvan worked
But here's the thing. Cosmo was like basically like an online 7-Eleven that had all the shit that they would have in a 7-Eleven, but once you hit click, they would be at your door within 60 minutes.
Yeah. So they had – their offices were on O'Farrell.
60 minutes ever.
Their offices were on O'Farrell across from the AMC Theater.
Yep.
And they had like a warehouse in this basement and a conveyor belt. So what would happen was dudes in the basement would pack the shit up into a box, would go up the elevator, slide down the thing, and it would go straight into the
back of a car. Was it guys on mopeds or trucks?
Bicycles and trucks.
But I mean, it was great because I mean, not just stoners, but all kinds of people are sitting around on
invalids,
like, you know, 11 o'clock at night going, oh man, you know what would hit the spot right now? Some fucking habanero Doritos and, and 2 liter Dr. Pepper, but I ain't fucking getting up and going out to get it.
Even though there's like a supermarket 2 blocks away, I'll wait the 60 minutes and have the guy come to my front door.
Yeah.
Can I pay the extra charge and he'll throw it through the window?
If you live in LA, this is the dream every day because they have Pink Dot.
Oh yeah, Pink Dot.
Oh, Pink Dot's so good.
Well, the thing we always used to do when Cosmo was still a thing was we would come home from bars when bars close, and then we'd play the Can We Stump Cosmo game, which really is a game that only Cosmo wins because it still costs $10 to get whatever we ordered delivered.
They didn't deliver liquor, right? That was the only that was kind of the fatal flaw.
But no liquor,
but not hard liquor.
Yeah, I think they may have been able to deliver liquor by the end, but basically we would try to come up with like Crystal Pepsi and the most esoteric products that were still available,
right?
And see if they could or could not have them,
right?
This was a Kristen Salvatore game, as I recall.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah.
Let's do a reply check-in on the Twitters.
Oh, yeah.
Because I already see, even the people I follow, tons of replies here. You know I'm not the real Will Smith, the actor. Right?
Yes. While I'm loading that page, let's talk about Netflix.
Okay, what's up with Netflix?
Netflix CEO Reed Hastings.
Yep.
Bingo. Netflix CEO Reed Hastings came out and said, hey, you know, we have to renew Starz this year, and it would not be shocking if we paid $200 million for that.
Yeah.
What did he say?
They might have to pay $200 million to renew their deal with Starz to get Starz movies.
Oh, yeah. Well, I told you that was a big thing. The Starz library
inflates
Netflix's overall library so much that you know, they,
yeah, well,
that's
without
a,
it,
that's
it would
a
just
very,
be the asylum shit.
That's a very valuable partner for that.
Now, what I would want is for that stupid Stars animation
to go away.
To go away. Before the Stars.
Because sitting through that for 3 seconds is just too much of a hardship.
It's numbing. It ruins the movie.
I have gotten a lot of replies to this. Most of them are, aw, hell no. Which, just to be clear, he never actually says in a movie.
Are you sure?
He says, iRobot.
He says, oh, hell no, in Independence Day.
He says it in iRobot.
But he does not say, no, it's Welcome to Earth is the bad one.
Yeah, Welcome to Earth he never
says. He never says Welcome to Earth. He says Welcome to Earth. And then punches the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where the F with an F thing came from.
Full racist.
That, totally.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Netflix. I don't even know how to parse $200 million for Stars. I mean, I know that they have to keep paying that because without
Stars pays the studio. Stars has to make the deal.
Well, the problem is that Stars have what they refer to in business terms as leverage.
Yes.
they now understand that they have something that Netflix wants and needs.
Showtime and HBO both have similar leverage. So it's not like Stars are the only place they could go.
Weird how I said it
movies.
The American way and you said it the English
way. Yeah,
right?
I did that on purpose.
I said leverage first. Oh, you just weren't listening.
Okay. All right. I was busy reading tweets.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think Netflix Stars has them by the balls, right?
Well, this is the thing. As much as great as Netflix is, and they're obviously doing gangbusters right now, they are ultimately at the mercy of all their content partners because they don't. They are just now getting into the business of creating some of their own content.
But that takes a while to spin up.
No problem. Then Netflix hires business guys, more biz dev guys, and goes straight to studios. Bypass Stars.
Right, but then those studios are gonna
sure, but why
hold them over a barrel the same way the other content partners?
Stars is not. I mean, in the long run, Stars is not long for this world. They have cable deals. That's it.
Right.
And that's their leverage with its studios.
And Stars is really just kind of a middleman, right?
Yeah,
so why
it
not
is
just go,
a middleman.
Why not
it is
just
a middleman with established
the
relationships with studios because of their cable deals.
Right.
Well, I mean, that's the question, is Netflix could go straight to the studios.
And no doubt they ultimately will.
The big benefit of the Stars deals is it helps, it makes that easier. So instead of having to sign 12 different licensing agreements with the major studios and then all the indie people, it's just, you know, one deal.
Right.
And the thing with going to the studios is the studios themselves want, because now the studios and the cable companies are one and the same pretty much, they want to have their own Netflix competitors. Some guy up there is like, we can do our own Netflix better.
And it's not like the studios are doing Netflix a favor. Netflix, you know, obviously are at a point now and certainly will be more so in the future where they can go to the studios and say, look, you want to get your content out there. We control the horizontal and the vertical. You got to deal with what else are you going to do? Put it on your own fucking bullshit site, put it on Vudu where no fucker goes.
Right. Good luck.
Don't think so.
Oh, what's the Sony one? There's a Sony one.
You mean it's been down.
it's some weird
Curiosity.
Name. No, no.
That's for music.
Oh. No. Sony has a video streaming site with their old movies. Oh, what's it called?
It doesn't. This is
the fact that you have to rack your brains to come up with what it's called tells you how much market penetration they have right now.
Yeah. Okay. So that's it for D9 so far. It's still going on. We'll have stuff on the site.
Usually, good stuff comes out of that. They obviously get these big heavy hitters to come up there.
And Ballmer is going to talk about, or
Windows
not Ballmer,
8.
Not Ballmer.
Sanofsky.
Yes.
So Steven Sanofsky is the guy in charge of Windows at Microsoft. Basically, he's the one that's responsible for Windows. Who shepherded Windows 7 through its development process?
Maybe they should give him Ballmer's job.
I don't know if he wants Ballmer's job. I mean, think about it. If you're in charge of Windows, you have a fucking great job.
Yeah, you've got the
premier product.
Wait, was he also in charge of Vista?
No, that was Jim Alchin, who retired immediately following.
Oh, okay, good. All right.
Jim Alchin's a good guy. Jim Alchin was responsible for XP and is a super, super smart dude. And I think was probably aware of what was going wrong with Vista, but unable to fix it and get a product out both. Anyway, so Sanofsky's talking later today. We'll have stuff about that on the site as soon as that's available.
Right.
And of course, you can. The All Things D is doing a good job covering their conference. We don't go to All Things D. We don't go to D because why go someplace when it's another publication? Anyway. Next up, Google introduced a couple of things today. Or yesterday, this week.
When don't they introduce something?
Google Offers. Remember a couple months ago when the rumor was that Google had offered to buy Groupon for like $5 or $6 billion?
Yeah.
And then Groupon respectfully declined, thinking that they could make more money in the long term out in the wide open.
Right.
Well, so now Google has introduced the same exact service.
See, I don't know why Google would even attempt to buy them in the same way that, you know, they reportedly weren't interested in Skype because they could just build their own version.
Right. Google user behavior.
Google has such a tremendous
Skype isn't a social network.
They just take the word Google and slap whatever it is they're doing on the end of it.
That's what you think.
Google iPhone.
Google things. Google stuff. Whatever. Google, you know.
Your examples are really bad. I'm just saying
the brand, you know, transports everywhere. Rather than spend $6 billion buying Groupon, why not just create your own one?
Because it's probably cheaper to do that than it is to spend the 3 years it'll take to build it up, develop it and build the user base. Like if they have a massive number of users who are already trained to spend money there, then why build it up? And why not just pay for it?
So Groupon is basically just online coupons, right?
Well, okay. So the way
locally based.
Right. The way Groupon works is companies go to Groupon or Groupon goes to the company and says, hey, would you like to get more people into your business? Let's build a offer that you can then sell to people. So, for example, the classic example is cupcakes, because who doesn't like cupcakes?
I like cupcakes. Fascists,
that too. Cupcake Company A says, hey, I'd like to get more people to know about my cupcake company. So I'm going to sell $20 worth of cupcakes for $8 and as like a door breaker, loss leader, whatever.
Right.
So to get people to know that my cupcakes are awesome and to know where
it's
my
limited
store
amount
is.
Too.
Yeah. Usually you limit it to like 500 people can get $6 worth $20 worth of cupcakes for $6.
Right.
So basically we
Now I want cupcakes.
Yeah, I know. I do too.
Why do you have to bring that up?
That's all Groupon does. That's the whole thing. They do it locally. It's a way to sell ads locally that nobody's done before. And local ads traditionally haven't worked that well if you ask people like Yelp and City Search and all those local-oriented things.
Well, it used to be a thing where you only get the deal if, I think, a certain number of people sign up for it.
Yeah.
And now it's just you get the deal if you sign up fast enough.
Well, they do both.
Okay.
Like sometimes they're time limited. Sometimes it's quantity limited. I mean, early on there were problems where they didn't do the quantity limited ones where – like, you know, some cupcake shop would do a cupcake deal and 30,000 people would sign up for it. And they'd be like, well, fuck, that's more than we usually sell in a month. We're going to go bankrupt if we fulfill all of these. But the thing about Groupon is you pay for it in advance. So it's not a coupon. You don't go to the store and say, hey, here's my coupon. It's that you say, I'm going to pay $6 for cupcake futures, basically.
Right.
So this is the magic thing, because a significant number of people probably never ever trade in the coupon for cupcakes, the Groupon for cupcakes.
Yeah, it's like a gift card.
Yeah, so you go to the store, hold up your phone. It says, hey, I bought this. Here's my code. They scan it with their barcode scanner, and then you've already paid. You just pick up your cupcakes. You don't do a cash transaction on the spot.
But this is everywhere now.
And then because when you pay, presumably you pay the Groupon. Groupon takes its cut and then pays the retailer.
Exactly.
Right.
And so Groupon is massive, billions, worth billions. Living Social. Also massive. Same thing.
Is that a similar thing?
Exactly. And it went IPO, worth, I think, billions, if not hundreds of millions. Yelp has the same thing. Check
it. It's such a simple idea.
And now, I mean, it's deals. People like saving money.
Why didn't we think of this?
Because we
come up with shit like pooping is logical. Instead, why aren't we coming up with Groupon?
Yeah. Because, you know, our minds are too highly trained, man.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, Vroom Fondle.
That's right, yeah.
We're thinking on a different level.
Random thing. Completely random.
Okay.
Tangent, even.
Oh, God.
I came back from a trip this weekend, and I got something in the mail sent to my house.
From a user?
Oh, is this the watch? What's that about?
So I got a package from UPS.
Looked like a nice watch, too.
And I opened it, and it's addressed to me, Norman Chan, with my home address.
Yeah.
And it's a watch.
From who?
I have no idea.
What kind of watch is it?
I did a search. It's like a $150 watch.
Yeah, like a Bulova watch.
Yeah, Bulova watch. And I didn't buy it.
Do you have a secret admirer?
Did you get drunk and buy it? I asked like everyone in my family.
You went drunk on Amazon?
Did it come from Amazon?
Did not come from Amazon. Came from somewhere in New York. And on the packing slip, had no like who bought for it thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it said like,
call the company.
Request delivery ship, like requested ship after May 22nd.
So this is someone who knows where you live.
Exactly.
Your birthday is not until September, right?
August.
And they sent it anonymously.
23rd. Call the company who sent it and find out.
That's kind of creepy.
It is totally.
It's a little
creepy.
Bit unsettling.
It's Fox Mulderey. Is it a nice watch? Do you like it? Is it something you'd wear?
I don't think it's something I'd wear.
Is it a ladies' watch?
No, but it could borderline be.
So it's someone who knows. It's time to Sherlock Holmes that shit.
I know.
Just to be clear, I don't wear watches either, but there is one watch I would wear.
What's that?
An Omega Speedmaster.
Oh, yeah.
It's the official
like
space program watch.
I like watches.
Fucking awesome watch.
Omega
watches are also like $3,000, so something I'm never, ever going to have.
Yeah. But this is
but
someone
if anybody's
who,
sending watches.
It's someone who knows where you live, yeah. but doesn't know you well enough to know that that's
I'm
not
afraid,
an appropriate gift.
I'm totally afraid this could be repercussions from the Star Trek marathon.
Oh, where people know what your house is?
Because I ordered pizza.
Yes, on the stream.
On the stream.
It's also relatively easy to find your house. Are you listed?
I'm not listed. Hmm. Also changed address when I moved into my new house.
Hmm.
The
also, house. Chan, come on.
Seriously.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah.
In San Francisco.
I'm easy to find, though. Social Security, if you know your birth date, zip code, age, you can find within three people.
Well, this is all very interesting.
I'm going to have to show up.
This is a mystery. You got to figure this out. Get to the bottom of this, Chan.
So did it not say where the
it came from a company
where it was
in New
bought
York.
From? Okay.
Call the company in New York. Get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, you got to call them up.
I mean,
it may be that they sent it to the wrong. Maybe they had the address wrong in the postal service to send it to the Norman Chan.
Nope. On the packing slip.
Right address.
And on. Yep.
Huh. I don't know. Maybe you're a secret admirer.
Very interesting.
Maybe you have a secret. Maybe somebody wants to wear a Norm suit.
That's right.
Okay. Google Wallet is also live. We talked about this a little bit last week.
What about PayPal suing them?
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, you didn't see that?
No.
It happened like the day after they announced it. PayPal was saying, this is our technology.
The NFC thing?
Yeah.
Wow. So Google is their how does PayPal own that technology?
I don't know.
MasterCard's
been
doing
them.
It for years.
This happened right away.
Probably a licensing.
Oh, yeah. Also, an interesting thing that you said last week about how you don't like the idea of an RFID card in your wallet because people can scan it.
Yeah.
I got the new ThinkGeek catalog in the mail yesterday. I was
the RFID
browsing
proof
it.
Yeah,
you get a wallet that blocks that. It's cool.
Yeah, I like my wallet to look like a cow.
You can also get a mini cupcake maker that makes 5 cupcakes in 7 minutes.
I have an oven. Isn't that going to be like an easy bake oven? That sounds horrible.
Much easier, though.
Holy shit. Shaq is retiring. He just announced it on Twitter.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. Well, it's time.
This podcast is all over the place today. We just went from Google Wallet to RFID to cupcakes to Shaq in like 20 seconds.
I'm go ahead.
That's got to be a record.
My whole game is off this morning. This morning, my wife walked out and picked up both sets of keys or my keys.
Whoa. I just like when you say this morning my wife walked out. You just left it there.
No. What? You don't like Gina?
No, I love Gina. I'm just saying
you think
that
she deserves better than
me? I'm just saying the way that you phrased it made it sound like it was going to be much more dramatic than it ended up.
No. Well, it is dramatic because I don't have a fucking set of keys to the car.
How did she take your keys?
Well, okay, so yesterday she picked up the car from the valet from the parking lot where they park it for you.
Mm-hmm.
So she had my key in her purse. And then I forgot to get the key back because she didn't get home until like 10:30.
You know,
I was already asleep.
I'm not that interested in retrospect.
The upshot is I had to take a fucking cab to work this morning.
From Pacifica.
I took the cab to BART and then BART it in. The guy was like, well, we can make a deal. I can drive you to wherever you're going. I was like, I'm going to front end Vallejo. And he was like, Vallejo, you don't want to pay for that. I was like, no, I know. I'll just take me to BART. Yeah, $9. Anyway, iCloud next week, WWDC. This is the big rumor. This is the – of the gang of four.
Yeah, everything. I mean, it was all expected.
Yeah, this will be the third cloud music solution, assuming Apple actually announces it finally.
Well, now, it sounds interesting in that from what we're hearing of these rumors that you won't actually have to upload your music, which is the hassle part.
That's
that
the la-la.
Really?
The deal.
The rumor is that – Apple will scan the library, and simply replicate it online.
I like that.
And this is solving a big problem with iTunes.
And
yeah,
and they will even in cases if a version of a song you've got is not that great, they'll replace it with a superior version, like a high bit rate. But you're gonna have to pay
for the song
for
the service.
No, for the service, because I think what they'll do is roll this into Mobile Me. Because as much as I love Apple.
Yeah.
$99 for Mobile Me is a ripoff. The problem is I rely on it now because
mail is there.
I love not so much my mail, but I like the
syncing.
I like all the automatic over-the-air syncing between calendar and address book and.
But you can do that with Google right now.
But he also has multiple Mac devices.
But you can do that with Google right now.
I know you can, but I know I found that to be slightly more hassle-y.
It is hard to set up calendar and contact syncing on the Mac. It's easy to do that on the phone. But on the Mac, it's tricky.
Yeah.
With Google.
I do use some Google because like Leah and I have a shared calendar.
Okay.
So if I need to put an event on there that she needs to know about or vice versa.
What like an example, like Tuesday, wear pants?
Well, if I'm going out of town or whatever.
Okay. Why don't you actually do that? Why don't I set one of those up? We never actually use it.
Really?
Yeah. Today she had on the calendar, steal Will's keys. Fuck him over.
Should have read it ahead of time.
I wish I'd known. Okay, so iCloud.
My question is, why did they announce before WWDC what they were going to announce at WWDC?
Did they officially announce it?
It's on the invites.
No, it's the press release.
Oh, right.
Apple put a release saying this is what we're going to talk about. Steve Jobs and friends are going to talk about iCloud.
I think they're setting up the best one more thing ever.
So why would they do that?
It's a trap. The whole thing is a trap.
They did it because the rumors were they couldn't get the deals in place between the studios.
Studios, okay.
Well, look, this being the last podcast before WWDC.
Yeah.
Let's have a quick what are we expecting?
I think the whole thing. I think. Well, we know it's going to be Lion.
Right? Lion, iCloud, iOS 5.
Right.
Okay. So let's go over these. Do you think? Obviously, they'll do a much more detailed feature.
No surprises on Lion. Lion's going to be new UI. It's more phony. It has the app store. It has the app grid.
Yeah. No, I mean, we kind of know. Do you think they'll announce a release date?
Oh, absolutely.
And price.
Okay. It may not be a date, but it'll be like late summer.
Right.
I think. I mean, it wouldn't even surprise. I wouldn't be out. It's not out of the question that they'll say you can go buy this today.
And then they're going to talk about
developer previews have been out for 4 months.
And then they're going to talk about iCloud, which hopefully will do many things. Like,
you can download iTunes 11 and try iCloud today.
So yes. I think iCloud will be either they're hoping it's probably day of. That's why they're pre-announcing it now.
Right, but that's what my thought is.
But it will be contingent on whether they can get all the deals in place
now, and iTunes deals.
So hopefully this will replace the execrable iDisk, which is just terrible.
Yes, this would be a reason to pay for MobileMe. I can see that.
Well, if the music solution is really cool.
$99 a year is kind of expensive by everyone else. Well, we don't know what Google Music is going to cost because it's free right now for 20,000 songs.
Right.
Amazon is by gigabyte, so it's going to be like $100 a year buys a lot of Amazon Cloud Player.
How about this? Google Music, when it gets out of beta and you have to pay for it, will that be the first Google service you have to pay for?
No. There's a lot of Google stuff you have to pay for.
Consumer Google
Picasa.
Services.
Flickr's
owned by Yahoo. That's right.
You can buy additional storage for Picasa it's per megabyte. You can do it for Gmail too. If you want more space in Gmail, you can buy it.
But as a core service, as a baseline service.
Well, Gmail's a baseline service.
Well, I mean, like as the first tier service.
I can't think of anything else you have to pay for with Google.
Yeah.
It may be that you don't have to pay for Google Music too.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, so cloud, I mean, at this point, I just want to see what they're going to do.
Yeah, I think they'll have a good solution. They always have.
You think that. That's your role here.
But I like this. I do like the idea that I don't have to upload all my music. They just mirror it online.
And in
some cases, will actually improve the quality of it.
So I uploaded all the songs from my MacBook, which is like 5,000 tracks, because I have a like limited selection. But that's what I sync to the phone, so it's the stuff I listen to most frequently. That took like a day and a half, 2 days. But that was on the work internet, which is crazy fast.
Yeah, that's
so
horrible.
I mean, the thing is, it happens in the background. You don't even notice. At one point, I just looked. I checked, and it was not done. And then I checked again, and it was done.
Right.
So it's not that big a deal.
Right. And then what else? Any one more thing? So are we going to see any iPhone?
Well, that's the question.
iOS 5, right?
Has this whole thing just been a giant head fake to keep people from stopping buying the iPhone 4?
Nope.
In the days leading up to this?
Nope. I think no next iPhone, and that will be a separate private event on Apple campus later this summer.
Interesting.
I'm inclined to agree.
I would not be surprised by one more thing. I do not put
Mac, one more thing. Will
but,
be software,
but the iPhone's not one. Not a one more thing. Exactly. The iPhone's too big to be one more thing.
We'll know on Tuesday or Monday.
Tuesday. Apple hasn't actually done a one more thing in a while.
No, the one more thing in the old days.
What do you mean? FaceTime was one more thing last year.
FaceTime for Mac.
Yeah.
FaceTime for iPhone 4.
Oh,
well, iPhone 4 is less than a year old.
I don't care. I still don't care.
It's been a long time since there was a one more thing that anyone gave a shit about.
Well, right.
every year people go one more thing, but it doesn't happen anymore.
It only happened once. There was the one more thing.
That was the iPod Nano.
Not iPod Nano. It was the iPod 3G with video. That was the real one more thing. iPod.
The one with the buttons across the top?
iPod that played video.
Oh, right. That was the fifth generation.
Flat iPod with video. That was when Steve said one more thing and everyone went shit crazy. Because everyone thinks iPhone was one more thing. No, iPhone was the entire presentation.
iPhone was amazing.
It was one of the best presentations ever when he said, 2007, when he said, today we're announcing
three products.
Three products.
And it's internet, one product.
A phone, a navigator and a what was the third one? Like communication device, a phone, and an iPod,
next generation iPod. Yeah,
and then he said it, and then the carousel.
He said iPod with touch controls.
Right, iPod with touch controls.
This is the saddest conversation we've ever had.
I'm reliving the experience. I'm sorry.
It's like reliving your childhood Christmases.
Because Twitter wasn't even there was no Twitter back then, and it was like the live blogs, and it was like three posts. Apple's announcing a phone. Apple's announcing an internet connection device. Apple's announcing touch iPod.
And then the magical realization that it was all one product. Oh.
And you know what killed that for me, though? Was when he's like, we don't think that people need to install things on their phone. It's all going to be web-based.
Oh, yeah. There was that. He did that both at that keynote and also at their Cupertino follow-up when they're talking about software.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But in terms of this keynote, I think that iOS 5 is a big enough chunk of previewing what the next generation iPhone experience is going to be like, that the hardware will be a separate thing on another day.
We will see.
And none of us expect huge changes in hardware.
So what do you want to see out of iOS 5? I know what I want to see.
I don't know what I want to see.
I want notifications. I want a real notification.
That seems to be
system.
What most people are complaining about.
I would like widgets. I would like syncing
we're not
to work
widgets.
Better.
No we're way we're going to get widgets.
They're not going to do anything that makes the phone more
syncing
like
syncing is a pipe dream, and that's the only real practical benefit, I think.
Yes, Wi-Fi syncing I do want.
I don't care about Wi-Fi syncing. I just want better app management for the phone in general.
That's an iTunes problem.
Well, two sides of the same coin.
I would like the phone to be unshackled from iTunes.
That would be cool, but that's never going to happen.
Never going to happen. Apple's in the business of selling you, making money both on hardware and software.
Yep.
I'm hopeful that Lion includes more AirPlay style. Like, I hope you can pipe anything from
AirPlay is the big API, and they need to make that better.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
It needs to be
right now.
In more devices and better interface.
Agreed.
Better control, more control over like when it. Sometimes AirPlay just gets jammed, and the only thing you can do is reboot stuff.
AirPlay is great,
AirPlay,
but it's not
AirPlay
nearly universal
be,
enough.
It needs to be like in laptops. It needs to be how we get.
Well, the question
screen sharing.
Right. Why do I have to share – if I want to listen to audio on the Apple TV, why do I have to do it from my iPhone and not from the Mac or from a PC?
Yes.
Anyway. And yes, we know that there is software you can install. It costs money and it's a pain in the ass to use. It's not an acceptable solution. I guess that does it for – hey. Well, let's do what we're testing and we'll talk about
this. No. One last iOS 5 thing, the Twitter integration we need to talk about.
Oh, yeah. So Gruber yesterday posted
– Well, there was TechCrunch posted a – a story about big
Twitter.
Rumors about Twitter being integrated, heavily integrated into
which
iOS
which makes sense
5.
Given their new photo and video sharing stuff that they announced today at D. I mean, the idea is that then like you hit the send to YouTube button in iMovie, you'll be able to go to the camera app and hit post to Twitter,
right.
And it'll just post it straight to the Twitter
account.
Yeah,
they need to get that into iPhoto as well.
Not just iPhoto, it'll be in
everything.
Probably Safari.
Yeah.
So links, you can hold down a link, you can tweet a link probably.
Yeah.
So the thing that Gruber said is, what if this is much lower level access, which is a good point.
What does that mean?
So what if it's a system level integration? What if you can share everything about everything you do on the phone across Twitter?
Well, the limitation there is Twitter then.
I'm listening to the new Lady Gaga album. Boom. Post to Twitter. Right now I'm I'm at work. Post to Twitter. You know, what if every aspect of the phone is integrated with Twitter?
It'll make the phone a lot more interactive.
Does that mean that my Twitter feed is going to start getting cluttered up with garbage?
Well, you just stop following.
I don't really care about what
the sorcery effect.
What you're listening to.
Well, neither do I.
Where you are.
I think Twitter is good for link sharing, photo sharing, and that's pretty much it.
I don't mind better I like when people post stuff from their Kindles. I kind of like that. I'm reading this.
No.
Well,
no,
hold on. If it's a status update that just says, "Hey, I'm reading this," that's bad. If it's a status update that provides some information around it, "Hey, I really found this book to be interesting," blah 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 blah.
No, then
that's good.
Then that's not automated. That's you type that manually.
Well, but the point is, it gets you started. Good tweets, you always have to type manually. We're talking about Twitter a lot today. I don't know exactly what's going on with this, but. That's it for news.
What about Nokia?
Nokia
in deep trouble.
What happened?
You not see that?
No, I was working all day yesterday. I didn't get to read the news.
Stock at a 13-year low.
To be expected.
Investors concerned that
shareholder revolt.
They're in big trouble. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I think they have to. I mean, the Windows Phone 7 thing is such a dramatic shift for them. I don't think anybody's surprised. I think they probably knew that their stock was going to take a dive.
I think.
And
I mean,
they're gambling on the future because right now they have none. Or I'm sorry, there will be people in the forums that say, yes, Nokia is a massive company. They make a lot of money now. They are not in a growth market, growing market leading
phase. I mean, the analyst stuff that I was reading on the news stories I read yesterday were like, you know, this either this Windows Phone 7 gambit with Microsoft pays off and rescues them, or that's it.
Yeah, that well, that's kind of – I think that's what we all assumed was going to be the case when they announced that they were partnering exclusively with Microsoft.
Yeah. I mean, who would buy a Nokia phone – you know, if you're going out and looking for a new phone,
they're incredibly popular.
Especially a smartphone.
Yeah.
I mean, Nokia's not even on the list of things I would consider. I'd be looking at an iPhone or an Android phone, maybe a Windows phone.
So that is a very US-centric viewpoint. In Europe, people still buy Nokia phones.
I guess so.
I've been told. I can't imagine why you would do that, but there are people that like that OS. It's like BlackBerry users. I mean, there are people that use BlackBerries for 10 years. That's what they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Same thing for Nokia stuff.
Yeah.
However, they're going to have a harsh realization when they see Windows Phone 7 because it's not going to look like a Nokia phone that they've become accustomed to.
No, it'll actually be attractive and easy to use.
Well, there is that. Let's play some music and talk about what we're testing.
One last bit of news.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding.
Late breaking news.
Kidding.
Or not.
Can I play the music? Are you sure?
I just got an email from Google.
About the Chromebook.
Be the first to get a Chromebook. Will's just going to play the music no matter what.
So, Gary, you just got an email from Google. This is what you're testing.
Maybe this is what I could be testing.
You could get a Chromebook.
I didn't get the CR48 when I applied for that.
Did you apply? You did apply?
I did apply, but it was late. It was very late. Whereas this... let's see.
I told them I managed IT.
It's on sale June 15th, but you could pre-order. Join the pre-order madness.
We're excited about the brand new Samsung Chromebook that goes on sale on June 15th. Fortunately, we managed to get our hands on a few machines a little early. We'd like to make these available to you, our biggest enthusiasts.
Wow.
When you buy your Chromebook, you'll also be getting a limited edition custom fit Chrome sleeve designed by Rickshaw, so you can carry your new Chrome. Wait, are they offering to give me a free one or send me?
No, they're offering to sell me one.
With a sleeve.
Eh.
I think we'll probably take him up on the offer.
Yeah, did you get the offer too?
I got the offer too.
Okay.
We're on the cutting edge.
Samsung said they probably will send us one. I'll see. I'll send them a note. What we're testing. I went to see Thor this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
I went to see a 2D showing.
Yeah.
At the Metreon.
Which is, you know, the smart play, I think.
I felt like I made a good choice. However, you guys have seen the movie?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. So the first like 10, 15 minutes are all in the dark. Right, it's a dark screen. You're at night in the New Mexican desert.
Right,
it is very dark.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting in the theater and couldn't see shit.
Yeah.
Couldn't see what was going on the screen.
Yeah,
and immediately thought back to an Ebert post from last week or the week before where he was talking about the Sony projectors. And
yes, this was a news story.
Yes, we had a story up on the site. This sucked. So I look back, you can see the thing attached to the nose of the digital projector.
Yeah.
And yes, there is a thing there. What's happening is there's a lens, an additional lens thing that goes on the end of the projector. And basically it has a Polaroid filter that spins in time with the frames.
Mm-hmm.
So when the left eye frame is up, then it shows, then the Polaroid blocks out the right eye and vice versa.
Right.
The end result is a very dim. Very different.
Now, why is that filter on if you're watching a 2D movie?
So I've been talking – I got a bunch of Twitters about this from people who work in the film industry, including like – we had a lot of good comments on that story as well, people who are projectionists and all that.
Yeah.
The reason it's on there is because it takes about 30 minutes, 15 to 30 minutes to take the thing on and off.
Right.
And there's usually only one person in the theater who's trained to do that.
And so in any given auditorium, they might be showing a 3D movie or a 2D movie that week, so they just leave it on all the time.
Well, yeah. And, for example, even in the theater I was in, it was a 2D movie during the day and a 3D movie at night, which is totally jacked, right?
So 3D is now even making 2D films look worse.
There you have it. Compounding this is the news story that came out this week that said revenue on 3D movies is significantly down through Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, absolutely.
Kung Fu Panda 2 in 3D underperformed.
And Pirates of the Caribbean 4 also did not perform well.
Well, there's so now my question, this is a little bit off of our normal topic, but it's relevant given who's in the room. Is this because Pirates of the Caribbean 4 and Kung Fu Panda 2 were not good movies? Or is
Kung Fu Panda 2 is...
Did it score reasonably well?
I think so.
No, it did not. It did not do over.
Oh, I heard from a couple of people that liked it. I mean, no, I haven't seen either, so I'm in no position to judge.
But it's a DreamWorks movie. It's a huge Kung Fu Panda 1.
It's a big DreamWorks franchise.
Regardless of the quality of the films, what seems to be happening now is that people are increasingly choosing to see the 2D version.
I'm not going
to
pay the $15.
Basically. Because it's more for the most part now, we are being asked to pay more for an inferior product. Now, this may be less of a case with something like Kung Fu Panda 2, because the CG animated movies do generally tend to look pretty good in 3D.
Yeah, compared to like Green Hornet 3D, which was a post-process conversion that was bad. And I think Thor was post-process too, right?
It was as well.
Right. Yeah. Now, something like Pirates of the Caribbean, which is also post-conversion, and a lot of the movie is dark to begin with. You know, this is the...
Yeah.
I would not want to watch a movie with sunglasses on. That seems ridiculous. But that is exactly what you're being asked to do with a 3D film.
Yeah. And
but Gary, you know... that when we see Transformers IMAX Midnight, we're going to see it in 3D.
Yes, but...
That is the kind of event movie.
Because part of the fun is seeing it in the most ridiculous balls-out way imaginable. Exactly. And also, I think... Step away from the mic to sneeze.
Thank you, Tay.
I think with a movie like that, they are actually making an effort to make the 3D work. But the problem is these days, all 3D is not created equal. When you see something that says in 3D, you don't know if it's going to be good 3D or shitty 3D.
Right.
It seems like the shitty 3D is on the rise. And now, you know, this whole idea of like even in 2D, like I'm the same as you. If a movie is available in 3D and 2D flavors, I'm always 2D. Unless it's James Cameron. Or in the case of something like Transformers, there are a couple of exceptions, I will always go 2D.
Well, the thing, if it's shot in 3D, I would see the 3D movie. The Pixar movie I would see, Coraline in 3D was really good.
Yeah.
Like there are exceptions. Right. However, you're right.
But, you know, I'm already someone that goes to the theater less and less because I'm very concerned about the integrity and the quality of my experience in the theater.
Right.
Especially if it's a movie I really want to see. Like Transformers, I don't really give a fuck.
Right.
So I'll happily go... and just have and be part of the fun.
You can eat some popcorn, drink a big ass
Coke. Yeah, and just have a good time.
Have
but if it's a movie that I'm really hyped for and excited about, like when the next Star Trek movie comes out, when I go to the theater to see that, I'm inevitably going to be kind of anxious because I don't want my experience. You only get to see the movie for the first time once.
Yep. Yeah.
I don't want my experience to be spoiled by dickheads in the audience or a projector that's not doing – or the sound is fucked up. Like you're totally at the mercy of the experience. You don't control the experience at all. That's why I like to watch movies at home now, where I know the screen and the sound quality is set up the way I like it.
I don't know. I think we've talked about this before. I think like next Batman movie, next Star Trek movie, we're still going
to
watch IMAX.
I'm going to the theater.
In theater.
Opening night.
You know, I'll still go. I'm saying that this is just yet another thing on top of everything else for me to panic about. Like, oh, it says 2D, but what if I'm in one of these theaters that,
some more stuff
that has a fucked up 3D filter?
Yeah.
I do about these things, the things I care about, I'm a movie person.
Yeah.
I like movies. I work in that business. When I go, I want the experience to be as good as possible.
Now, Gary,
and this is now just another fucking variable that is out of my control and I have to worry about.
You say that, but if your next movie, you know, was in 3D and that theoretically guaranteed a 20% bump in gross, would you be opposed to that?
Well, here's the thing. There's a very good chance that my next movie will be in 3D.
Right.
I don't know. It's
not your decision.
Those decisions are made way, way above my pay grade.
Right.
At least, you know, the Will Smith movie that I wrote, that's a big science fiction movie. There's a good chance that would be a 3D spectacle type film. Again, I don't know what the decision
I didn't know you wrote something for me. That's so sweet.
Yes.
You realize I don't have any, I mean, I have a Super 8 camera we can shoot on.
Yeah. And
you've gone too far.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I don't want to do that. If it's not in 3D, what's the point? You know, I don't get to make that decision. I could only hope that if they were to put 3D in a movie that I worked on, that they would do the good kind and not the kind that makes it worse. But here's the thing. You're saying, oh, but that bumps up the ticket price. It only if people choose to pay those prices. What we're seeing is people are rejecting paying the higher prices for an experience, which they're increasingly seeing is not as good. And in some cases, even worse than 2D.
Wall Street has reflected that too.
Yes. Yeah, so analysts are not liking this.
DreamWorks Animation stock's down.
Real 3D stock.
Real D,
yep.
Yeah, Real D is down. I mean, the thing about 3D is, had they introduced it as an upsell, not as an upsell, but as a something that you can't get at home to drive people into the theaters, then that's – like I would have been okay with that, right? Like you have two multiple showings. You just pick the 3D one if you want to go. Maybe it's a buck more instead of $5
more. It's not – Thor, and in select theaters in 3D.
Right.
It's Thor 3D also in select theaters in 2D. They've made the, trying to make the 3D version the norm.
Well, and I had to look to find a 2D showing.
It's wrong.
Like, it was hard. I didn't have my 2D glasses with me, so... Like, because I don't give a shit about the $5, but I don't want to watch the 3D.
But a lot of people do give a shit.
No,
especially when they're buying like a whole family of tickets.
Well, yeah, Gina was off shopping or something, and I just went to the movie myself, so it was a $5 net increase. So yeah. I mean, that's fine.
In terms of both in the theater and at home, I'm generally anti 3D, and I have a 3D TV. Those glasses, by the way, have just gathered dust ever since I bought them. I've probably spent maybe.
Wait, podcast bingo.
Maybe 2 hours. What?
Keep going.
65 inches?
I wasn't going to mention it. It's not relevant in this case.
63 for me?
57 for Will.
Fuck you.
58. Give him a break.
Yeah.
But I can't remember the last time that a technology that has been proven to be so unpopular with consumers is nevertheless being so actively forced on them by the industry. Like, well, it's like we have no choice. 3D is here. All we can do is vote with our wallets, which is what people seem to be doing. My guess is that in 2 to 3 years from now, we'll be done with 3D. I think it will go away.
I was going to say, I'm going to be really interested to see what's going to happen at CES next year. If we're seeing a lot of 2K resolution TVs, which I think is probably the next big jump.
We're not ready for that.
I mean, I think we'll see that as
there's not enough content.
No, I'm not saying for content. I'm just saying we'll see 2K resolution and passive 3D, and they're going to try that one more time.
Well, that's the thing.
Then you have light glasses.
Passive 3D for sure is going to be a big thing.
But I'm saying
there will be one last push.
Passive 3D on double resolution LCDs.
Okay, correct. Okay.
Which gives you essentially no downside to having 3D.
Okay.
Because you have normal glasses. It's just a little dimmer, but the backlights they can crank up to accommodate.
That'll be very expensive because I think there's...
Well, that's going to launch at the $5,000 price.
Right. The TV makers still believe that... Even with passive, when resolutions cut down to like 720 or 540,
people can't tell the difference.
Taking the glasses out of the equation is the only way that this technology is going to stick around. The problem is that technology is not around the corner.
It's 10 years away.
And our patience with the current solution is going to run out long before they can improve.
The R&D is already there. These are going to come to market. It's just that by then, who knows what content will
be. What do you guys think about D-Box? Like, D-Box moves the seats, right?
Yes.
So it's like a ride.
Yeah. Now, if you're going to go see a movie like Fast Five or something, I think that can be very appropriate.
Have either of you gone to a D-Box theater before?
No.
We should make a field trip.
I was, my movie was shown in a D-Box theater in LA, and I really wanted to go.
Yeah.
But I wasn't able to get down there. But at the Man's Chinese down in LA.
Oh, that has D-Box?
I think it's either that or the Egyptian has it where it was showing.
Okay.
You get the vibration. It's... You know what they call 4D when you. This is anyway. If you've been on like
the
Shrek
park,
the Shrek ride at Star Trek. Universal or whatever, Oh, I don't think it. I don't think it really shifts you around like a roller coaster. I think there's like vibration and very minor hydraulics.
No, there's some D-Box is like
some D-Box is articulated
way
yeah.
more.
Oh, okay,
like the 4D stuff we have at like the Star Trek experience.
Yeah,
that's just like prodding the seats and shooting air.
See that?
It's something that. Wax you in the ass from the bottom? That seems uncomfortable.
For a Fast and the Furious type movie or whatever, that feels appropriate. That feels like it's bringing another sense into play that's appropriate with the action.
You're not going to see Schindler's List 2 in D-Box.
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh, man.
oh, that's bad.
So I don't, 3D, yeah, I think
no
it's, I think we're already starting to see the real beginning of the backlash against it.
Okay.
What else we would have? Norm, you and I got to go for a test drive in the Chevy Volt at Maker Faire last week. That was exciting. It's electric and gas. It has a generator. We drove it around a little circle.
Yeah.
I didn't get to really see what it did.
Yeah. What's the point? Doesn't it just feel like driving a car around?
It's quiet. It's like you have a hybrid.
Yeah.
Well, this is more hybridier than your car.
Yeah.
Is your car dead quiet?
It is when it's under like 20 miles an hour, yeah. Uh-huh.
So yours works like the Prius, right, where you take off and up to like 20 or 25 miles an hour?
Yeah, you have to be particularly careful when you're backing out of a parking spot or, backing out of a garage or whatever, because the car's making so little noise that someone who's walking by behind you may not even be aware.
Doesn't
have
the beeps? The Prius beeps when you back up.
Does it?
Yeah.
Mine doesn't.
Oh. Yeah, that's one of those things, the Prius, like the Tesla, they put engine noises in when you're going under a certain speed. So there's speakers under the hood that make engine noises to keep people from stepping out in traffic.
I mean, when I turn the ignition key in my Ford Escape, you don't hear a light comes on. That's how you know the car is now running.
Yep. Well,
there's no engine sound.
I did that in the Volt. I got out and left the car running. Like, you need to turn the car off. And I said, oh yeah.
Press the button.
Okay.
I kind of missed that. I had a rental car, I think last year, and a Mustang. I had never driven a Mustang before.
Okay.
And I checked in at the car rental place, and they said, "Do you want a Mustang?" I went, "Fuck yeah! I've never driven one of those."
Or hardtop.
It was a hardtop.
Okay.
And I've been driving my hybrid for a couple of years, and I'm very happy with it.
Yeah.
But you know, when I turned the key on the Mustang, and boom, like, oh shit, this is a real motor car.
Yeah.
Felt totally
American
different.
Muscle cars. It's probably the rental car model though.
I kind of secretly want a Mustang.
It's time. You should get a real gas hog before it's too late.
Yeah, before they become. I was talking to a guy. I was researching a project a few years ago, and I was talking to a guy at Berkeley who worked in the energy and resources group. It's like their kind of energy, oil, alternative energy module over there.
Yeah.
And he was talking about he actually had predicted correctly a lot of stuff that's since come true, like hybrid cars and electric cars and charging the charging stations popping up all over California. And he said, and I think this is true as well, hasn't happened yet, but this is the way we're going. He said, and particularly in places like California and eventually all over the world, driving a gas vehicle, you're going to be viewed the same way that smokers are in public.
Well,
and I think you actually already see that with the things like the H2, like the really obnoxiously gas-hungry mega vehicles. Like, they're already less and less popular because people don't want to be seen to be dickheads.
That's kind of a San Francisco thing, though. You still see a lot of those in L.A. and like parts east.
Yeah, but I mean, I think
you're saying we're tastemakers.
We're the true progressives. I think we're a year or two ahead from where everyone else is thinking on this. So what starts here eventually radiates all over. The
thing is, no matter what we think is going to matter, it's the price of gas is what dictates that stuff.
Right.
The question I have is, what's going to happen when there's no production gas powered cars anymore? I mean, is NASCAR going to go electric at that point? What's going to happen to like racing and motorsports?
Yeah. Well,
dirt bikes?
I think there could be an exemption for those beyond, I think we could live in a time, say 10 years from now, where there are no more gas powered vehicles on the road, but in motorsports and things like that, they continue to run on gas for a while longer. Mm.
Or it gets more dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. What if it's like hydrogen fueled? So it's like rocket powered. That sounds pretty fun.
Hover cars.
Yeah, exactly. Death race 4000.
That sounds good.
Car silent.
Norm, you've been testing the Xperia Play reviews. We're shooting that tomorrow.
Liking it so far. I don't play games as much as I thought I would, just because the selection isn't so great. And it is quite big in your pocket.
Have you tried any emulators yet?
That is the one thing I'm waiting tonight to do.
Okay. I'm very interested to hear what that experience is like.
Need to acquire some the ZROMs.
Okay. Only of titles that you've legally purchased, of course. Okay. I've been using the Infuse 4G still. I actually left my iPhone at home today, so it is my phone today. It's quite nice. It's much better than I thought it was going to be. Like, I was expecting the TouchWiz stuff performs really well. It's still running Froyo, which is a little bit of a bummer. The big screen is good. It's nice and thin, so it stays in your – it doesn't feel bulgier in my pocket or anything. I really like it. I also was using Google Music this morning on the train on the way in after my wife took my fucking car keys. And, yeah. It was Google Music's pretty rad.
That's a big ass phone.
It is. It makes the iPhone look tiny.
I mean, that's almost like a miniature tablet.
It's smaller than
a tablet. I mean, it's almost getting into that kind of crossover area.
It's half an inch smaller than the Dell Streak.
Yeah.
And that was 5-inch tablet.
I think I'm comfortable saying that 5 inches is too big. But 4.5. This is a TMI thing. It's like the length over the width times the angle divided by the girth.
Oh, no.
What is it? Yeah, TMI. I like it. It's pretty good. It's going
to
get a positive.
Yeah, I mean, I've had some things to say about these jumbo sized phones, but I actually kind of, even though this is the biggest one, I actually kind of like it. I'm getting more used to the idea of big screens, and I kind of like it.
Well, it makes typing a lot easier. The immediate notice.
Well, I actually had a hell of a time typing it when I was busting out that fake tweet.
Yeah, you mean your My Little Pony tweet?
Yeah.
Thanks for that, by the way.
But that's only because I'm not used to the layout, because I was trying to type on an iPhone keypad. But
That is the hardest thing about switching back and forth between phones. It doesn't switching between.
It doesn't seem like the best quality or the brightest screen I've ever seen on an Android phone.
It's actually a really good
screen. A really nice screen. It's I almost like the screen better than the iPhone screen. It's the OLED.
Vibrant.
Oh, I have the brightness turned down.
Oh, you need to turn it up.
Yeah. It's the weird thing about Android is on Froyo, at least, when you run the Kindle app, you can't adjust brightness from inside the app if you have automatic brightness changing on. So I turned that off because I was using Kindle this morning on the way in. It's quite good. The OLED doesn't do that well outside, but the battery life seems to be pretty good on it.
This is being marketed as a 4G phone.
That's bullshit.
Established
as bullshit.
Okay.
Is
there such a thing as a real 4G phone?
Yeah, Verizon sells 4G.
So the LTE, that's real.
LTE is 4G.
Okay.
Limited cities. AT&T is rolling out 10 cities this summer.
To a lesser extent, I even think that Sprint's WiMAX stuff T-Mobile's WiMAX stuff is – no, it's Sprint. The Evo 4G is WiMAX. I think that is – like it's not 4G LTE, but WiMAX is giving speeds that are equivalent to 4G. This is bullshit though. I did a speed test with this and the iPhone side by side. They get the exact same thing.
Right,
the latency is better on the Infuse consistently, but the throughput is more or less the same.
So where is this going to fit in the pantheon of Android phones? Every week I come in here, there's another Android phone.
We have a question about just this topic. So,
oh, okay.
Do you want to table it for like 20 seconds?
Sure.
Anything else we've been testing, Norm?
We just shot a quick look of the Mativia thing, and you just have to watch it.
Yeah, watch that quick look. Yeah, it'll be up by the time you hear the podcast.
Oh, yes.
Gary, anything for you?
What have I been testing? I got my new golf clubs. So I'm going to test them out this weekend.
Okay.
Excited about that. I'll be checking out the technology in those clubs.
You're playing next week, right?
I'm playing
Sunday.
I'm playing on Sunday. Yeah.
Ooh, do you know who your partner's going to be?
I'll be in a foursome.
Do you know who your foursome is going to be?
Not yet. I presume I'll be finding that out either later this week or on the day.
This is for the Penny Arcade, the Child's Play Invitational.
So E3 is next week.
Yeah.
A lot of people in the games industry will be down in LA.
Yeah.
And so on the eve of E3, the Sunday, there's a golf tournament in support of Child's Play.
Is there anyone you don't want to play with?
I don't know who's going to be there, so I wouldn't know what names to cross off a list.
Okay.
But I've been assured that I'll at least be put with people I know.
Okay.
Now, of course, saying that saying that I know someone, I mean, that doesn't mean that I like or dislike.
Either
way.
This is something I would – like I would not do this specifically because I wouldn't want to be in the social situation. Like because playing golf for 3 or 4 hours with somebody, like that's – like it could end up a real disaster.
Yeah. I think there's a good chance that, you know, I'll muddle through. I'll find a way.
You pick up the ball and move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I tested out these new clubs when I picked them up the other day, and I was very happy.
At the range?
Oh, that's terrific. Yeah.
Can you fire a straight ball down the middle 400 yards, Tiger Woods style?
400 yards is pushing it.
Okay.
Even for Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
Happy Gilmore, maybe.
Well, he has the hockey stick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he has the hockey style slap Potter. Shot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, There has been some interest in some golf tech.
I would like to do this. We planned out our editorial calendar for the next 4 or 5 months, and there is a golf week in there.
It's a good excuse to get outside.
Yeah. I like
In the summer, perfect, right?
Organized way to enjoy a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
So let's take some questions. If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, the podcast email is podcast@tested.com. Keep the questions short, under a minute. Leave some hometown trivia. Record with a microphone if you have one. And levelator or just make the questions audible. And what format do we not accept, gentlemen?
WMA.
WMA. Yes, nicely done, Chan. Fist bump. Here's our first.
WMA, FTL.
Here's our first question.
Hello, Tested crew. Will, Norm, Gary, I suppose. If you're not including Ani,
what the fuck does that mean?
To the best of your ability. This is Aaron G. from Alexandria, Virginia.
Hi, Aaron.
As for hometown trivia, I live in the shadow of a second, even more phallic George Washington Memorial.
Oh, I've been there.
This one of Masonic construction, if you can imagine such a thing. I am in the market to upgrade from my Verizon Palm Pre Plus to an Android phone. It's a common enough question for you guys, obviously, but there are a couple little twists. I am nowhere near the end of my contract, and I am willing to pay full price or even break my contract to get a new phone. My primary concern, since I'm obviously so dissatisfied with the pre, is future-proofing, so that this doesn't happen again. And while I'd be wowed by almost anything, I'm specifically worried about not getting new versions of Android in a timely fashion, and I want to go with dual-core if possible. Is there some standout sort of Nexus dual-core phone upcoming on any carrier? Am I crazy to be looking for or expect one? Is 4G a thing to include on my list of demands? I've done a little legwork of my own. On the dual-core front, it really seems like the Motorola Droid X2 is the best for now, and it's for a price I'm great with, and I could stay on Verizon. Seems like the Droid Bionic would be worth it as well, but I can't get any firm details on when that's coming out. And I've never even heard of the T-Mobile G2X. How does it stack up? Does it have the proper Google updates? It would end up costing as much as the Bionic with the contract breaking, but that might make a difference to me. Thanks for any help.
Okay. So first off, I would call Verizon and bitch about the Pre Plus if you're unhappy with it. Frequently, if you go in and do a little bit of complaining, especially on a phone like the Pre that's not really being particularly well supported right now, you can probably get them to at least give you a off-contract price for whatever phone, or split the difference or something. So if you want to stick with Verizon, do that, and they will try to retain you as a customer if you're threatening to cancel your contract, which will cost you between $150 and $250 on Verizon, I think, depending on how far into the contract you are. As for high-end dual-core Android phones that are going to get updates quickly, the way to get updates quickly on Android right now is to buy a Nexus phone. There is no dual-core Nexus phone right now. The Nexus S is a single-core Hummingbird, which is like a 1 or 1.2 gigahertz, I can't remember, Samsung ARM chip. It's a perfectly fine phone, but it is not a dual-core phone and thus is not as future-proof as other dual-core phones.
Let me ask a question to elaborate on that. If I understand that if you want to ensure that you will get the latest Android software updates, that you need to go with the Nexus, the pure Google phone. I get that. Does it then after that just descend into a complete lottery, or is there like a second tier where you're like more likely to get it?
So the second tier, this is a good question. The second tier are going to be phones that use the stock Google UI without the custom front ends.
Right.
So if your phone uses HTC Touch or HTC Sense, sorry, I always call it Touch Sense, but it's just
don't they all
Sense.
Have some bullshit on them after?
Not everything.
Nexus. Okay.
So, like the T-Mobile G phones, the HTC G phones, so the G1 and the G2,
yeah,
are stock Android experiences. The Motorola Droid 2, which is the side slide, keyboard, that just uses stock Android.
You reviewed that G2X that he mentioned recently, right?
We reviewed the.
You liked
it? No, we didn't review the G2X.
Oh no, I was looking at an Engadget review. Yeah, they liked it.
Yeah, it's a fine phone. That's a stock. I think that's a stock experience too. But I'm not as good on those phones as I am on the AT&T.
So
and Verizon
he's sticking
stuff.
On Verizon, but he does not want 4G.
He seems like he's willing to break contract entirely.
He didn't know if he wanted 4G.
And he wants
4G
to know if
not.
He should spend money on 4G. The thing about Verizon's 4G stuff right now is it's a battery. It's kind of a battery hog. So if you get one of the LG, the G2X or Optimus 4G. Mm-hmm. That's a phone that has a giant-ass battery, and you're going to use it all the time.
I would recommend you go to Tesla.com and click on the post that says the best phone for your carrier and read that story, and you have all the answers you need for both 4G and non-4G options.
Yeah, this is a particularly relevant thing. We were talking about the fuse a minute ago. It's a 1.2 gigahertz single-core processor. I like the phone a lot. It feels really fast. It feels good right now. Samsung has committed to supporting their phones for 18 months, so it'll get updates. How timely those updates will be
is unclear. How do I unlock
this
thing?
Just slide it. Slide the whole screen.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah. It's a fine phone. The Atrix is the other side of that. It has a shittier screen, but it's a dual-core CPU. It's running Moto Blur instead of Samsung's TouchWiz. So neither of these phones are going to get updated quickly. Neither of them are running Gingerbread now. They're both running Froyo. It's a continuing this is always going to be the problem. If you want something that's going to get updated quickly, don't get a custom UI. That's the long and short of it.
If you want to stay on Verizon with 4G, you don't go with Thunderbolt. Go with the Droid Charge.
Yeah.
And if you don't want 4G, Incredible 2, because the Droid 2X has a crappy screen as well.
Yeah, it has the TFT, the bad TFT, right?
The Pentile.
Yeah. Well, there's good Pentile and bad Pentile.
Bad Pentile.
Yeah.
Worse than Atrix.
And then yeah, G2X is the preferred on T-Mobile, and Sprint is the Nexus S, but that's a single core. So you're not – the thing is you're not going to get what you want. There's no dual core fast update phones available right now, except for maybe – is the G2X a custom UI or no?
Yep.
It is, yeah. So, yeah, that's that. Let's do another question.
Hey, Will, Norm, Gary, Anna, Herman here from New York City. Fact about New York City, we were the first audience to pay for a 3D film back in June 10th, 1915. So we apologize. My question is about backing up. I've never had a system for this in place. I've lost a lot of data over the years because of it. Now, I keep important stuff onto these external hard drives, but I know that's not really a solution. I'm putting together a PC later on this year, and I was wondering, should I get a hard drive just for this? Am I better off like on a cloud type of service? Is that relatively easy to set up? Is there a way to like automate that? What do you guys do? What do you guys use at home? Really would appreciate the help. Love the show. Love you guys. And always be testing.
Where was he calling in from?
New York City. Herman from New York City.
He had a very enigmatic accent, though. He sounded like he was from somewhere else.
I was not paying attention to that because I had to delete a tweet because Gary said that I pooped myself on Twitter.
He's asking about backups.
Okay. So there's a couple ways to back stuff up. Hold on. Basically, depending on how much stuff you want to back up, I gotta post something here real quick.
Gary gave you a warning. Do not keep him unsupervised.
Hey, there's only one way you're gonna learn, dude.
Okay, so Herman, here's the story. If you have small files to back up, you're not backing up media, videos, photos, stuff like that. There are a lot of good cloud-based solutions. The popular one is Mosey. You can also use Dropbox to do that same service.
Yep.
Really, I pooped myself? That's the best you could do?
Well, I only had a moment. I felt like if you saw me typing out a long message, you'd get wise to it. So I had to do something quickly.
Yeah. Mosey is good for files and important stuff like that. It's relatively inexpensive. You pay annually. You run a little thing on your desktop and you say, hey, here's the type of stuff I want to back up.
Yeah.
Everything in my documents folder. It's good for that.
I listen to talk radio a lot. And in the commercial breaks, we're always advertising this service called Carbonite. But
Same kind of thing.
But I'm very skeptical about it because on talk radio, you know, it's always like buy gold and the end of the world is nigh. So I feel like everything on talk radio is bogus. So I don't know if Carbonite's a ripoff.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to sell ads for talk radio.
Yeah.
That seems like a bad job.
Yeah.
Carbonite is fine. I mean,
that's a legit thing.
My understanding is that I've never tested any of this stuff. I've used Mosey once for like 3 days, but
okay.
If the thing is, the stuff I want to back up is also media. So I want to back up my music collection, my video collection.
So you need a lot
of
storage.
So I need a lot of storage, and cloud-based stuff isn't good for that because your broadband upstream is pretty shitty unless you have Fios.
Right.
Or something similar.
Right.
So in that case, there's a couple ways you can go. If you're a Mac user, the Time Machine stuff is dead simple, really easy to set up. You can either buy an external drive, just plug that in via USB to your computer and set it to backup every night.
Yeah.
Or you can get a little fancier and buy a Time Capsule, which is like a NAS box that sits on your store, on your home network, and just backs up all of your Macs if you have multiple.
Yeah, I have a Time Capsule and I love it.
Yeah.
It's very seamless hourly backup. And I think, you know, if you're serious about backup, which everybody should be in this day and age. Although oftentimes, you know, it's only after you've had a near-death experience that you really wise up. Like I've had a couple of...
Yeah, you lost a script one time, as I recall.
I've had a couple of really bad crashes where, you know, back in my pre-backup days. And after that, you know, you never go back.
You can't spend enough money on backups, especially when hard drives are 100.
And the thing, you don't have to spend a lot of money. That's the key.
Upshot.
You know, a time machine or any kind of portable USB hard drive solution is going to help you. But the point I was going to make was, if you're really serious, you need to be two-tiered. You need on-site and off-site.
Right.
Like, if my Mac explodes, then great, I've got my Time Capsule. But if my house is broken into and they take all my shit, then, you know, you're going to want the off-site backup as well.
So, you know, that's why I like the cloud-based for the off-site stuff. The small, like the stuff like tax returns and the photos of your kids and stuff like that. Put them on Mosey, put them in Dropbox, pay somebody to take care of that.
Yeah.
It's good money spent. On the Windows side, there's no what a time capsule cost? Like $250?
Well, a time machine.
Yeah, it's free. That's built in. You just need an external hard drive.
No. I'm talking about hold on. Time machine is
That's a service. That's the app.
No, I'm trying to make I'm trying to remember the distinction between the box that is just the external hard drive.
That's Time Machine.
Time Machine.
That's just any external hard drive works with that.
Right. And Apple will sell you a Time Machine hard drive.
Yeah, but that's literally just a USB hard drive.
Right. But the point I'm making is the time capsule that you're referring to is also a router.
Yeah.
So it's a wireless router and a hard drive. So that has the benefit of being
access point.
Two things in one.
Yeah.
And you can do the wireless backup, which is very handy. So if you've got a laptop, that you keep down in the living room and your router's upstairs, you're still wirelessly backing up every hour or whatever it is you set it up as, and you can set, multiple computers to it. So I love that system. I found that to be much easier than the Windows. I don't know if they changed it in Windows 7, but the old backup system in Windows I found to be a pain in the ass, and I like the Apple system better.
So Time Capsule is kind of expensive. It's like $300.
Jeez.
It seems very high for that,
for the 1 terabyte
service, for the 1 terabyte,
but you're getting the router as well.
Yeah, but
how much is just the Time Machine?
There is no just,
oh, do they not make that anymore?
External hard drives are just like $80 for a terabyte hard drive,
right? And pretty much any,
and a router,
you can format pretty much any terabyte hard drive to work with Time Machine.
The important thing to realize is, especially on the Windows PC, when you're backup does not mean put stuff on an external hard drive. Backup means you have multiple copies,
right? So you have a monthly copy, a weekly copy, and a daily copy. So if you need to go back in time to a file that you accidentally wiped out, you can.
And right. And having DVDs of data, that's not backing up.
Well, it is, but it's a really unfortunate way to do it.
I mean, because most people do that, they start deleting stuff off their computer. Like, you need to have stuff on your local computer, on portable hard drives, and then also possibly in the cloud.
Yeah, so on the Windows side, the equivalent is to set up a Windows Home Server box. And when you do that, you install a little program on the Windows machine that basically connects to the home server and runs a backup every night, like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It works very... very much like Time Capsule. The restores are a little bit trickier.
Restores are a pain in the ass.
Yeah, restores are not as slick. Time Capsule is a very easy way.
Yes.
And it's integrated at the firmware level. So if you want to restore your machine from a backup, you just hold down Command Shift E or something when you...
Yeah, and I like the fact that if I were to, if I buy a new Mac, all I've got to do is plug it into that thing and it'll just restore my entire Mac. I'll have a brand new computer, but it'll be my old computer, restored back onto it. I like that.
Exactly. So I would say the Time Capsule is a ripoff at $299 for 1 terabyte or $499 for 2 terabytes.
Mm.
Windows Home Servers cost about the same as that. Anyway.
Because what's the going rate for a good quality 1 terabyte hard drive?
$80, $70. Right. Bucks.
And for a good quality router?
$80.
Right. So for about half the price.
Right.
A little bit less. Get the same solution.
A little bit more than that.
But it won't be white.
It won't be white and all one box and have a nice Apple logo on it that makes me feel fuzzy.
Windows Home Servers are a little bit expensive too. You need to have an older machine. You can use an older machine and convert them over if you want.
That's interesting. They don't make the dedicated Time Machine anymore, just the Time Capsule.
Well, dedicated Time Machine. I don't think they ever did. I think it was just Time Machine.
No, they did. I'm pretty sure they did.
Okay. Anyway, I guess that does it for questions this week.
Whatever.
If you have a question, podcast@tester.com, all that stuff I said before. And that will do it for our show this week. Thank you, Gary Whitta. Thank you, Norman Chan. We will see you guys next week with another episode of This Is Only a Test. Stay tuned for fake outtakes and, see you guys next week.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
Tested.
I love planets.
I love being on one.
Next week's a very big week, isn't it? In tech. Apple and E3.
We got to do Thursday morning, and it's very important because we will not be here on Wednesday because we're going to be – we have to roll straight from E3, getting back at like 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock into podcast on Thursday morning.
Awesome.
Yeah. You're going to get raw, unfiltered Chan Smith.
Wait, what is this?
Next week, we're going to E3 for the day on Wednesday.
Oh, are you?
And then flying back on Thursday. I'm going to be in the bomb house on Tuesday night. I don't know how that's going to go.
The what house?
The giant bomb house.
They have a house down there?
They get a house near the convention center.
Oh, God, that sounds like a nightmare.
It seems like I'm worried. I think I might make a backup hotel just in case, an emergency hotel.
Yeah.
It seems like Jeff mentioned that they had rats last year, yesterday, which makes me a little scared. So E3, WDC. What are we going to talk about on Fake Outtakes this week, though? Second to last space shuttle flight landed today.
Was it the second to last?
This was the last Endeavor flight, Atlantis. So this is an interesting story. You know, ever since the Columbia blew up over coming back in from orbit.
Yeah. Well, Columbia was coming back.
Challenger was going out.
Okay, that's okay. That's I remember Columbia. That was relatively.
I remember both.
Not that long ago.
Yeah, no, that was in 2003.
Yeah.
Challenger was 86.
Yeah, exactly.
I had a snow day that day, and I was sitting watching the space shuttle launch on TV instead of Price is Right and saw it happen.
I was pooping my pants.
There's your mistake right away, not watching the Price is Right.
Well, Price is Right was preempted because this was when they still cared about space shuttle flights. So second to last one. The next one, since the Columbia thing, they've always had one shuttle on standby so that, like, if something breaks on the way up and they know they're not going to be able to come back in safely, they can roll out a quick launch of the backup shuttle to rescue the people who are on the...
That seems even more risky, though, because so much time and preparation goes into launching a shuttle. The idea of just, like, throwing one up there quickly sounds even more...
Well, the point is they have it on standby. They have a tank there. They have the boosters ready to go. And they can assemble it in like 7 days.
It's
and
very, very contact. Why build one for the price of two? You can get two.
I was watching for a price of one and a half. You can get two.
No, I was watching the Rachel
contact. It was price of two.
I was watching the Rachel Maddow show yesterday.
Okay.
You know, as I am wont to do, because it's either that or Hannity or Piers Morgan, whom I both
you hate all of
despise.
People.
And she has a thing at the end of her show every day. It's like, you know, here's a cool thing.
Okay.
And it's interesting to something that you don't often see. But it was – she was talking about –
We do that too, you know.
Yes. The crawler that actually takes the shuttle from the construction site, you know, where they prep it, out to the launch site.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a 3.5-mile drive along this special road they built called the Crawler Way.
Yep. It's the size of a freeway.
Yes.
With a grass strip in the middle and the tracks ride on the –
It's basically a flatbed truck where the flatbed is the size of a baseball diamond.
How much do you think that whole thing weighs?
They may have mentioned it.
18 million tons.
It's massive.
18 million tons.
And what's amazing about it is it's
tons. Hold on.
What?
18 million tons.
It's very heavy.
A ton is 2,000 pounds.
I mean, this thing is absolutely monstrously huge.
Right.
And it's incredibly, you know, you have to remember this is the amount of detail that goes into what they do at NASA is even just the fucking truck that takes the shuttle 3 miles across the way is this incredible piece of technology.
A modern marvel.
And it's built and it has all these incredible hydraulics and gimbals and things so that even when it goes up a slope,
it's on
the nose of the shuttle never moves.
Yeah.
Because everything is being hydro thingy adjusted to make sure that, you know, everything stays completely level.
Yes.
Because you can't build something with as many moving parts and as much rocket fuel in it as the space shuttle and then fucking jiggle it about as
there's
you're
no fuel
it down the street.
There's no fuel in the shuttle.
They fuel it at the other end.
The boosters are solid, so they have fuel in them.
Right.
But the tank is empty.
Right.
They or maybe fuel it's when pressurized.
You can't be shaking that thing about on the way.
You know, the speedometer on that thing goes to 2 miles an hour?
Yeah, it takes so it's 3.5 miles from the
building.
Point A to point B.
Yeah.
And it takes all night to cover that distance because it's so incredibly
And they
slow.
Shift to drive. They drive in shifts.
I think they said something like 18 gallons.
32 gallons a
32
mile.
Gallons a mile. No, that's
exactly right.
No, 32 gallons a mile is what my car gets.
No.
32 gallons.
Your car gets 32 miles a gallon.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, 32 gallons a mile. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I had it backwards.
That's actually pretty efficient now that I think about it.
To move 18 million tons?
18 million tons.
For 90 gallons of gas? So,
That's not bad at all.
18 million tons is the weight of the crawler and the shuttle.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And an elephant weighs 3 tons.
Yes.
Yeah, this room doesn't – you can fill 90 gallons of gas in this room.
Oh, way more than 90 gallons of gas in this room.
So
90 gallons of gas is what that van that we drove to CES, that held 90 gallons of gas.
No, it did not.
No, it held $90 worth of gas.
The big difference.
It held 40 gallons
of gas. No, 20 gallons probably.
But I thought it was cool that they highlighted that because, you know, the shuttle and everything that NASA does is amazing. But sometimes you don't realize that even the most mundane thing is in itself amazing.
Which is why, like science fiction, I know will eventually get to awesomeness and spaceships. But it will never be let's jump in our jet and press the button and fly off. There's going to be a lot of calculation, a lot of prep.
Yes.
To get us off the ground.
Yeah.
Well – I mean, maybe at some point that stuff, you know, it's magic.
You don't think it'll be like Firefly where you can just get in a ship and fly off into space?
No.
Really? I think so.
I think so. I believe.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that you don't.
I don't think so.
Why not?
I think it'll be teams of people. maybe a lot of robots helping out, but it'll be a lot of because.
So you don't think we'll have? You don't think we'll have the Enterprise?
No, I think we'll have the Enterprise, but that's going to restart. But getting from ground to space,
yeah,
I think we're thinking the paradigm of cars and getting from point A to point B in a car. Car technology has improved. When you press a button, the car's on and driving. That's fine.
But with 2D. But the Enterprise can land and take off.
Yeah, it can.
Voyager can. We've seen it do it.
Yep.
Okay.
Enterprise can also land.
So here's the thing. You're saying it's going to require
teams of people. I don't think we've seen the Enterprise in atmosphere. I don't think we've ever seen it land.
I think the amount of math and the number of variables required for
the saucer
for space flight.
Do you want to check the podcast bingo card and see if there's anything we missed this week? I feel like we covered a lot of bases.
I just want to say, I think that computers will take the place of many of those human beings.
Or robots.
Or computerized robots, yeah. I mean, do you think computers will ever rival the computing power of the human brain?
Computing power of the human brain and cognition are completely separate things.
Okay, so.
So, yes. For your question, yes.
Both?
No.
You don't think computers will ever have sentience?
That's semantics and philosophy.
A 99-cent calculator is superior to the computer power of my brain.
Well, like, but you're kind of an exceptional case on the
no, but that doesn't mean
on the downside of the curve.
No, I'm getting to the point that, you know, a calculator can do complex arithmetic much faster than you can.
Well, yeah, I'm doing good to do long division.
Yeah,
man, I'm going through the bingo squares right now. We did definitely have that's racist. That's what she said for Will's 5-inch.
Yeah. We didn't. Nobody said that's what
we,
she
we
said.
We were all thinking. No, we did. When we did two girls, one bucket or something.
We didn't say that's what she said, but we just said that's what
I think I said that's what they said, but that's only because you said two girls.
By going down the list of bingo topics, we're going to talk about
topics. No, no. This is separate.
This is for anyone still playing at home.
This doesn't count.
On our fact check, we definitely did that. Both Leah and Gina mentioned.
Yep.
Wow.
Definitely playing with the iPad right now.
Yep.
Displeasure with Samsung.
Opposite of that. Samsung dodged the bullet this
year. Oh, it's actually you like the Infuse.
Yeah.
Describing how to win.
No, didn't get there.
That wasn't there.
Food discussion.
We did that.
I actually want to talk more. We talked about cupcakes and things and cheese sandwiches.
We've got to wrap it up because we've got to shoot some videos.
Okay.
Afternoon.
All right. Food. I had the best pulled pork sandwich
in my entire life. Portland?
In Portland.
Which place?
Last weekend. People's Pig. It's a food cart.
That sounds great.
They have good food trucks up there.
So juicy. It was garlicky and juicy, and there's things in it, and it's everywhere.
Did you have coffee when you were there?
Did not have coffee.
Did you have donuts?
I had donuts.
Did you go to Voodoo?
I had six donuts.
Have you been to Voodoo Donuts? Have you ever been to Portland?
No. I've been through it. Never stopped.
Oh, so I got to thank everyone on Twitter. Give me recommendations. Voodoo Donuts is amazing.
Yeah, so describe the Voodoo Donuts experience.
Voodoo Donuts, there are two locations, actually. The one downtown is closed, which was like 2 blocks from
the
hotel.
Hold on, the one next to the Portland Keep Portland Weird sign?
Maybe, yeah. I think it was closed. Yep,
oh, that sucks. That's the best one.
No, it's closed for renovations. Oh, okay. It's the only one I was there. So actually, I went to the one that actually they shot the Man vs. Food episode in, which is on the east side, East Burnside of Portland. And so it's open 24 hours.
Yeah.
Long lines all the time. They have a ton of different weird donuts. They have donuts with like cereal on it. They have vegan donuts.
Ground up Oreos.
The best one. Fantastic. Okay, my favorite one, chocolate donut.
Well, the thing they're famous for is the maple bacon log.
No. The thing they're famous for is the voodoo donut, which is a donut shaped like a voodoo doll. And they inject like some type of
raspberry
jelly
cream or something. Yeah.
In it.
Oh, so it's like bleeding when you bite into it?
That's cool. Each one is decorated a little differently. So it looks like a voodoo doll.
The thing that everybody told me to get is the maple bacon
log. The secret one is the maple bacon. So it's a maple.
It's like a Long John.
With maple on top and real full strips of bacon.
My goodness.
It like embedded into the maple while
that doesn't sound healthy at all.
It's a maple log.
No, it is not.
But my favorite one was the chocolate donut with the Oreo crumbs on top.
Was it chocolate like cake donut?
No, it wasn't chocolate cake. I guess it was chocolate. It was a regular donut with chocolate icing.
Okay.
And then Oreos
embedded
on top.
In the icing.
Oh. And then peanut butter drizzle on top.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
The peanut butter is the healthiest thing in that.
That's crazy.
I ate six of those.
You ate six of those?
3 days. In the span of 3 days.
Oh. Jesus Christ, dude. That's more than I ate all weekend calorically.
There's a lot of I had a lot of flavor enhancers beforehand.
Oh, really?
Wow. I'm gonna edit that out of the podcast.
Yeah, I think that's a good a point as any.
Yeah. I drove through Humboldt County.
Norman.
Good talk, guys. I have a food recommendation.
Okay.
I may have mentioned this last week, but if you like cookies, this sounds like such a commercial spot.
Hold on a sec. Hold on. Do you have a cookie recommendation?
I made a great cookie discovery last week. If you like Oreos, and who doesn't?
Did you get the vanilla golden ones?
No. Well, I mean, I do like the vanilla ones.
I've been looking at those for a long time.
The golden ones are fantastic. And, you know, double stuffs are great.
I'm anti them.
Do you like the seasonal ones where they change the colors?
I like the mint ones.
Mint is the only non-regular Oreo I will have.
Yeah. Well, so what I was going to recommend is, you know, Paul Newman has his whole line of stuff. I didn't know he makes his own Oreos.
They're not Oreos.
They're called Numinos.
I don't think he makes anything anymore.
Right.
Well, no, but his company.
Dead. I watched The Sting the other day.
Did you? It's a good movie.
Fantastic movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to recommend the mint ones.
The mint Numinos?
The mint Numinos. And also, here's a proposition that Oreos cannot offer you currently. Ginger cream
Numinos. Oh, that sounds gross.
No, they're really good. I'll bring some in for you.
Okay.
You would like them.
Good talk, guys.
I'm hungry.